This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on September 22nd, 2016. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
As I was saying just a couple minutes ago, I guess since I've officially gaveled the meeting in for today, as I look out, we have a larger than usual audience. Perhaps you're expecting a more lively discussion than the typical one here at the commission today. I'm not quite sure what gave rise to that. I think I was expecting just a quick and dirty meeting, going straight to motions, very little discussion. I don't know. We'll see what happens along the way. Before we get to the first item on the agenda, I'd like to recognize Commissioner Weintraub for a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to note this is a very significant meeting because it is the last meeting that Casey Morgenheim is going to be on our payroll and here in attendance. Casey's been with the agency for almost 10 years. She spent most of that time working in our Office of General Counsel, but she has also spent a significant amount of time up here on the ninth floor assisting commissioners, most often me, in getting our work done. When she was down in OGC, Casey was a go-to person. All the managers knew that if they had a particularly challenging and complicated case, Casey was one of the lawyers that they could always go to and know that the matter would be treated with diligence and thoroughness and intelligence, and the analysis would be spot on. And I valued those traits as well when she worked in my office. She also downstairs played an important role mentoring interns and new attorneys because she is a caring person and she cares about this agency and its mission and the people who work here, and I value that about her too. She's leaving us to go work at the Department of Education, where she's going to also be working on important enforcement matters, going after diploma mills that are rooking students out of their hard-earned tuition payments and making sure that students get good value out of their education dollars. So we are happy to see that she's going to continue in her great career in public service, and we wish her well and wish her every success. But I'm going to miss you, Casey, and I know many, many people in the building will.
Commissioner Rowell.
I just want to add to that. I will miss you as well, Casey, and obviously you haven't worked with me quite as long as you have either for the agency or for Ellen, but your advice, your breadth of knowledge about issues and your balance, your approach to things that was thoughtful and very sort of fair was unbelievably helpful in helping me to form my views. So thank you very much, and I'm definitely going to miss you. But, you know, there's always pisco sours.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to add my thanks and appreciation and wishes for the best. She worked for the three of us for the most recent period of time for the three commissioners. And part of her job was to try and work and ameliorate areas of disagreement on ongoing projects so that by the time they came to us, we were really talking about the nub of the issue rather than some of the issues that seem to detract from what we really need to get done. She worked very hard at that, and it was a tough job because it was sort of a new approach to do things, and I think it's a good start for example for us to just keep on going. So we will miss you, and thanks.
I would echo the remarks that my colleagues have stated, and wish you all the best too, and thank you for all the service that you've performed here at the agency. I'd also just like to mention that in the interim between our last open meeting and today, we had a departure at the agency. Dan Patalis, who's actually here with us today, the last time we met, he was up here on the dais as our acting general counsel, and he has since that time transitioned into private practice, and we haven't had an opportunity to properly send him off in a public setting. I just wanted to thank Dan, who was the head of the Enforcement Division in the Office of General Counsel for several years, and as I mentioned, has been our acting general counsel for the last while as well. His leadership was much appreciated. His calm demeanor and and level-headed advice was always greatly appreciated, and we greatly miss him here at the agency. Thank you for everything that you did while you were here, and certainly wish you all the best and now that you've opened a new chapter in your professional career. So I wanted to make mention of that as well. So
hear, hear.
Commissioner Weintraub. So.
Yeah, let me.
Commissioner Ravel.
I wasn't prepared to say anything, and I will also echo what the chair said, but I also have to say that Dan exemplified a truly extraordinary general counsel. I mean, he had all the qualities that make for excellent, thoughtful, and balanced, fair advice as well. And I really appreciate the work that you did. Wish you the best.
We will now turn to the first item on our agenda, which is, I think before we turn to the minutes, I believe we may have a motion for late submitted documents. Let's
see. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first item on the agenda is the correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the minutes of the meeting of July 14, 2016 and August 16, 2016 in agenda document numbers 1636A and 1637A.
Okay. Let's move approval of the minutes. According to the motion of the Vice Chairman, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Now, do we have a motion for late submitted documents?
Mr. Chairman, I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of the following documents. Agenda document 16-40-A, proposal to launch rulemaking. Proposed statement of policy, agenda document 16-41-A, proposed statement of policy on application of foreign national prohibition. Agenda document 16-42-A, promoting voluntary compliance. Agenda document 1643A, draft B on tech modernization. Agenda document 16-44A, statement regarding proposal to rescind advisory opinion 2006-15 TransCanada and to open a rulemaking to ensure that the U.S. political spending is free from foreign influence. Agenda document 16-34B, petition for rulemaking on implementing the consolidated and further continuing Appropriations Act 2015, and agenda document 1635B, political party rules.
We'll take a vote on that motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. We'll next consider item 2 on our agenda, which is Reg 2014-10, implementing the Consolidated and Further Continuing Appropriations Act of 2015. We have Tony Buckley from the Office of General Counsel to give a presentation on that. Good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
And please
proceed.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Thank you. The Commission has received a petition for rulemaking from the Perkins Coie LLP Political Law Group. The petition asks the Commission to adopt new regulations and to revise its current regulations to implement amendments to the Federal Election Campaign Act made by the Consolidated and Further Continuing Appropriations Act of 2015. The petition also asks the Commission to adopt new regulations and to amend its current regulations regarding convention committees. The Office of the General Counsel has examined the submission and determined that it qualifies as a petition under 11 CFR 200.2B. Therefore, we have drafted a notice of availability seeking comment on whether the Commission should initiate a rulemaking on the proposals in the petition. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Are there any questions? Commissioner Goodman.
Yeah, no questions, just a comment about this proposal. I believe that this proposal and the item that is next on the agenda echo a discussion that this Commission had several months ago where Commissioner Weintraub raised the issue of the national party rules. The new accounts at the national parties, and the possibility of putting some parameters around the proper use of those funds. I think at that time there was bipartisan support for investigating that. We didn't do it on our own volition, but we have this perhaps as a vehicle to inform what we might want to do. And so I see this as quite a constructive vehicle for the Commission to receive comment about how the parties have used these new party accounts and consider how they might do it in the future. I would note one change from the draft that Office of General Counsel originally submitted to us, and that was just to extend the time for comment. We also discussed that when this issue last came before us, which was that our state parties and our national party committees are overwhelmed right now with national elections. After the national elections, you run right into often some turnover at many party organizations, and then you run into a holiday season. You run into an inauguration. And so I think that this will give ample time for all parties to consider whether they want to submit comments and to do so. And I look forward to hearing those comments. I think we will also, by January 30, the comments can be informed by the actual experience of the parties in the first election cycle using these accounts. And I think that will be a useful factual predicate for us to consider how we might, if and how we might proceed.
Is there any further discussion? Commissioner Rattle.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the timing because, well, I think it's great that this has been submitted and I'm happy to support it. It's 2 years after the budget cycle when the issue was first raised, and we've been talking about it since that time, and it would have been better. I mean, I agree with you. I'm okay with having it now and a comment period after the election at the beginning of the year, but it would have been so much better had we done something on this topic prior to the election. So with that, I of course, am going to support this.
Okay. Any further discussion? If none, is there a motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I move that we adopt the Notice of Availability Draft B as presented in the document today.
We have a motion on the table. Any discussion on that motion? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
I wasn't going to say anything about this, but let me just flag one issue that I think would be particularly beneficial for us to get public comment on. When Congress passed these new provisions and gave the political parties all this extra money, they designated this money for specific purposes. And there has been discussion both within the commission and outside as to whether once the party committees raise the money into those accounts, whether they can then move the money around anywhere they want to, or exactly what they can spend the money on once it comes in the door. So I would encourage any commenters who see this notice out there to weigh in on that issue that I think may be one of the most significant ones that will come up in the course of the upcoming, hopefully, rulemaking.
Okay. Commissioner Goodman?
Not to prejudge the petition, of course.
No, I'm just asking for people to comment on the issue, on the question.
Okay. We'll turn next to item 3 on the agenda, which is Reg 2016-03, political party rules. We have Joe Wensinger from the Office of General Counsel to give us a presentation, and I am informed this is your first time presenting at the dais. So, you know, no pressure. Big audience, news cameras here broadcasting. And I think Commissioner Goodman may have a series of 20 to 25 interrogatories. We'll make sure that this is a memorable one for you, but welcome to the commission, and pleased to have you here with the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, commissioners. On June 15, 2016, the commission received a petition for rulemaking from the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. The petition asked the commission to revise existing rules regarding the use of federal funds to pay for certain activities of state, district, or local committees of a political party. The Office of General Counsel has examined the submission and determined that it qualifies as a petition under 11 CFR 200.2B. Therefore, we have drafted a notice of availability seeking comment on whether the Commission should initiate a rulemaking on the proposal in the petition. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Is there any discussion on this matter? Commissioner Goodman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. hope springs eternal, and I think that's what this petition represents. A little over 2 years ago, this commission held a forum to hear from state and local political parties. The national parties were represented there, too, but I believe the The people who participated most vocally were representatives of state and local political parties, Republican, Democratic, and I believe even the Working Families Party of New York was in attendance. And they all expressed concern about how our regulations impact the operation of state and local political parties. And I would just like to highlight for the public some of the material that's been presented to us in this petition by the chairman of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party, Mr. Martin, and his counsel, Mr. Reif. This petition lays out a predicate for the concern out there, and it talks about how the state and local political parties play an important role in our democracy by pursuing political goals that a majority of Americans support. And these committees are well situated to perform grassroots political activity in order to support the party's national political and electoral interests, which can help to ensure consistency and cohesion in party goals. And while it used to be common practice for state parties to pay for communications featuring candidates from the top to the bottom of the party ticket, these are now largely replaced by single candidate communications, and only when the party is able to allocate their scarce resources to the cause. It goes on to say that state parties have traditionally worked to increase voter turnout through voter contact methods, such as voter registration and get out the vote, and that our regulations have strapped the hands of state and local political parties and limited their ability to perform these functions. The petition strikes, a hopeful chord in the end, that following the forum of 2014, they hope that we could reach some bipartisan consensus to help all political parties. And this, I believe, inherently, if we do receive comments and are moved by them, I believe that this, and perhaps in combination with the petition that we've just put out for comment, could form the basis for a comprehensive party rulemaking next year. And so I'm looking forward to hearing the comments in response to this notice of availability. As you know, I do start with opinions about that. We've discussed them, but I'm going to keep an open mind on this petition and look forward to receiving these comments.
Any further discussion? If none, do we have a motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I move that the Commission approve agenda document number 16-35-B, draft B.
On that motion, we'll call for the ayes and the nays. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Congratulations, Mr. Wenzinger, for bringing unanimity to the Commission on your first try. So. The next item on the agenda is item 4, Reg 2013-01, draft notice of proposed rulemaking on technological modernization. We have Jessica Selenkoff from the Office of General Counsel here, who has done yeoman's work on this thus far. We will not be voting on this today. We have two documents that have been made blue. This is an agenda item and that's been on the last three or four open meeting agendas without documents. I wanted to put the first document that is on the agenda is the original draft that was considered, was that December?
November.
Draft B is the more recent, a working draft. I'm not saying that it's the final draft, but it's a draft that indicates some of the direction that we've been heading towards. There may be further modifications. I think that there's been good progress amongst all the offices in pushing this forward. It's going to require a little bit more time to get it across the goal line, but I'm hopeful that by the next meeting in 2 weeks that we'll be able to do so. And so at that point, Ms. Selenkoff, you will truly have your opportunity to have a star turn and see this come to fruition. That is at least my hope. So we will hold this over for consideration at the next open meeting of the Commission. Next on our agenda is item 5, which is promoting voluntary compliance. The agenda item here is a memorandum from Commissioner Caroline Hunter. Madam Secretary, is there a sunshine notice motion that needs to be read before we consider this?
Yes.
Okay. Then I will turn to the Vice Chairman to make that motion.
I move that the Commission add to the agenda the consideration of, one, promoting voluntary compliance, two, proposed statement of policy on the application of the foreign national prohibition to domestic corporations owned or controlled by foreign nationals, and three, statement regarding proposal to rescind advisory opinion 2006-15 TransCanada and to open a rulemaking to ensure that the U.S. political spending is free from foreign influence, and that the Commission determine pursuant to 11 CFR section 2.7B that business so requires and no earlier public announcement was possible.
The Vice Chairman has presented a motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Madam Secretary, that motion carries by a vote of 6-0. As I was saying, the next agenda item is a memo from Commissioner Hunter about promoting voluntary compliance, and I will turn the time over to Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I'd like to talk about an issue that I hope all of us can agree with. The statute allows us to encourage voluntary compliance with FICA, and it's something that we already do here at the agency. The head of our information division is standing in the back of the room, Greg Scott. He and his team do an excellent job with conferences, with our website, answering the 1-800 number. We try really hard to get the word out to the public and to the regulated community about the laws and the regulations. We also have Ms. Debbie Ciccone sitting here, who is the head of our reports analysis division, and they spend a lot of time and energy working with committees who file with the FEC to make sure that they also are voluntarily complying with the law. So while we already do a lot of things, it sort of occurred to a few of us that this might be a good idea to have the commission come together and hopefully highlight a few, just a few points that are most relevant to a citizen who may want to be engaged in the process. So the target audience here isn't, you know, lawyers or the regulated community who already are on all of our listservs and are frequent our website. It's more to people out there who may be interested in contributing to a federal candidate or who may want to put up a billboard or do something to advocate on behalf of their favorite candidate. We have, as you know, a whole book of regulations, tons of AOs, MERS, and all of that. So distilling that into four bullet points was not easy, but we tried to pick the ones that were we thought most relevant to the people sort of out there that they should know about. Just really quickly to talk about each of them in turn, the first one, protect our elections from foreign influence. We're going to be talking about that later this morning. Everybody agrees that foreign nationals cannot participate in U.S. elections, and believe it or not, there are some instances that we see where people don't realize that. So we want to make sure that the public is aware that they are not permitted to participate in elections at any level of the government, federal, state, or local. With regard to staying within the dollar limits, we just picked one and said the individual contribution limit for this cycle is $2,700. You've probably all read in the news a lot of small donor contributors don't know that, and so they keep going on the website of their favorite candidate and contributing over and over and over again, not realizing that there's a limit. And thankfully, the campaigns most often catch that, but this is in an effort to let the public know. One example that comes to mind that I'm aware of is an elderly woman who, every time she got a solicitation from a party committee, she wrote a check for $100, $200, and she had no idea that there was a point where she was going to come into, that there'd be a problem with complying with the federal law. So we thought that might be important. Don't give in the name of another, no straw donors. You can't, obviously most of the people in the room understand that. You can't write a check for your favorite candidate and be reimbursed by anybody. And a quick story on that, I was giving a speech once where after I talked about this prohibition, somebody came up to me and said, you know, I'm the treasurer of a state campaign, and I was talking about state and federal laws, and she said, we had no idea that this was a violation, and they had been doing that for months and months. And she was horrified and said, we'll have to go back and fix our reports and all of that. So we know that it's not intuitive for some people that you're not allowed to give money it's not yours. Can't be reimbursed. The last one, keep your political ads independent. This one's particularly tricky to write because there's, you know, you could probably write 5 pages on this, but trying to distill it, one of the main reasons I wanted to put this one in there was you have to have a disclaimer for independent expenditures. And by way of example, there's a very large billboard right around the corner from my house right now where somebody says so-and-so supports one of the presidential candidates, and there's no proper disclaimer. And it's not the end of the world, but that person clearly doesn't know that there's a requirement to have a disclaimer. So I just sent this around to my colleagues yesterday and have spoken with each of them, either directly or indirectly, and look forward to their comments. They haven't had a chance to really study it, so we'll hopefully be able to come up with some language that we can all agree on. And a couple of ideas, and I'm open to more, but a couple of ideas. One is perhaps we could submit something like this to various newspapers around the country as either an op-ed or a letter to the editor signed by all 6 commissioners. And of course, the goal there would be to get to the sort of mid-level newspapers or the smaller ones throughout the country. Maybe we could publish something in the USA Today. I'm told that's the most widely circulated newspaper in the United States, and as you know, it's in a lot of hotels and that sort of thing. So maybe that. Somebody else had the idea of doing a video that we could post on our website. I'm not sure about that one, but we could try it.
Could we hire actors to play our roles?
Yes. We should have doubles, definitely doubles. And Greg Scott said he's more than willing to help if commissioners agree, putting it on the website in a place that would be appropriate or sending it out to his very useful list. And somebody else had the idea that if we send it out to your list, Greg, even though a lot of them know about all of this, they may be inclined to forward the information along to their donors or their listserv. So these are just some ideas, and I look forward to working with my colleagues. Obviously, the election is right around the corner, so we don't have a whole lot of time, but thank you for the time.
Sure. Is there any discussion on this proposal? Commissioner Rattle.
Thank you, and thank you, Commissioner Hunter. I think this is a really good idea, and I totally agree with you that one of our most important roles is to provide information, and in particular to the people, the citizens, as you say, who are engaged in the political process. So I certainly support it. I was interested this morning in receiving Duane Pugh's note of some potential additions to this, and I'm glad he did because it raised an issue that I think is really important and we've seen is very important in this particular election, and that is the problem of so-called scam PACs when people are making contributions to entities that represent themselves as actually working for a particular candidate or committee and not. And so his suggestion, I think, is a really good one and an important one to add to this, because this is part of what you said was the purpose, and that is to inform citizens who are engaged in the process, and that would do so. But I know we have yet to sit down and talk about all the issues, but I just wanted to voice my strong feeling that that's a really good addition.
Mm-hmm. Sure, happy to talk about it, happy to work with you. Just so the public knows, this suggestion, and if this is the one you're if this is not the one you're referring to, let me know. Duane Pugh, who is our congressional affairs person here, suggested adding, you can also find the authorized campaign committee of any candidate you would like to support,
right.
And that's a helpful suggestion. We're trying to get to that in one of the lines here, but happy to consider adding something so that people, if they want to know who's soliciting them, they can at least go to our website and get more information by looking at that campaign's public filing. And that's what we're, and I agree with that as a something to add.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also think this is a good concept. I, as Commissioner Hunter knows, I was talking with her a few days ago about whether there was anything that we could agree on to move forward on an issue that some of us have been trying to get on the agenda in a productive way for months or years. And I said maybe we could agree on putting out better information to the public to make sure everybody at least understands the prohibitions. And the next day she popped up in my office and said, funny you should have mentioned that, because we've been working on something and we're going to get you a draft later today. And I'm tickled to see that the first thing on the agenda on this list is protect our elections from foreign influence. Happy to see that language picked up here. I would hate to think that anybody thinks that these two sentences are going to accomplish that task, but we'll have more discussion on that later on the agenda. Don't give in the name of another. I would think we would want to also add don't accept money from somebody else who wants you to make a contribution. It's a there's two sides to that transaction. So I think there's some wordsmithing that needs to go on, and as Commissioner Ravel pointed out, we may have some suggestions for other top topics that we want to add in. But I think it's a terrific idea for us to be more proactive about trying to make sure that everybody understands the rules, because it is surprising how many people do show up on our enforcement docket who say, ooh, I didn't know there was a rule against that.
Is there any further discussion? I'll just add my two cents that I think this is a very constructive suggestion from Commissioner Hunter. I think that, as she mentioned, our information division, led by Greg Scott, does an excellent job at educating through conferences, through literature, through web presentations, and so forth. And anything that we can do, new ideas, innovative ideas that we can present that can better educate the public as to what is permitted and what is prohibited, I think can only be to the good. So I look forward to being part of this process, and hopefully we can move forward quickly on some of the suggestions that have been that have been discussed. Mr. Vice Chairman,
let's just add my appreciation for the time it took to put this thing together. I think that's great to take the initiative. It's a good start.
Next item on the agenda, what is listed here is item 6, has been resolved offline. So we can move past that and move to item 7 on our agenda, which is the proposed statement of policy on the application of the foreign national prohibition to domestic corporations owned or controlled by foreign nationals. There's a memo that was drafted by myself and Commissioners Hunter and Goodman. It's agenda document number 16-41-A. And I will open that up to discussion if anyone wants to. Or we could just move past it if no one is interested. So, Commissioner Goodman.
This document is an effort. It is a response to the discussion raised by Commissioner Weintraub in her forum. Mr. Weintraub, you've raised the issue, and it needs to be stated quite clearly at the outset that I think, I'm a provincial kid from a small southern city, so, we all, I think, here agree with Congress's judgment beginning in 1966 that foreign nationals shouldn't be contributing to our campaigns for office. So we all agree with that. And I attended your forum to hear more about that issue. I was listening for both legal framework ideas for that, and I was also listening for evidence that we have widespread circumvention of existing rules. I want to let you know, though, that you did spark both with an open mind. You sparked a lot of study and analysis of this issue by me. Personally, I had, as a private counsel, advised many people on the extant rules and how to comply with those rules, but it did require deeper thought, and I credit you with bringing an issue and triggering that deeper thought. And what you're seeing is, at least from my perspective, a proper way that how we address this issue of applying the foreign national ban in a modern economy where there are many mixed business associations and U.S. corporations increasingly owned in part by foreign companies. And I looked at it all with a fresh look. I had never really taken, until you called this to our attention. I had never really looked at this and thought more deeply about how, from 1966 until now, what the foreign national ban means and how to apply it in an increasingly complicated economic system. But one of your experts, I think, identified the issue, which was you have to identify specifically what you're trying, what the subject of your restriction is and what you're trying to prevent, and tailor any regulatory scheme to that issue. Now, I think you may have defined the problem, the legal issue that we're trying to address more broadly than I have, but I want to let you know I've listened quite carefully. And so I think where we diverge a bit, if I understand your New York Times piece, is in the how to go about it. So Congress, the proposal before us, heeds the lines that Congress has drawn for our agency. Congress has drawn certain lines by defining the term foreign national quite specifically. Those lines have been rewritten from 1966 to 1974. Then came the Clinton DNC scandals of 1996. So in BICRA in 2002, they redrew the lines. The commission reacted to that in a rulemaking in the BICRA rulemaking of 2002 and did a very deep dive into what Congress intended to target here. Where did Congress draw that line? And this commission analyzed quite carefully the issue of U.S. domestic subs and the complicated relationships with foreign parent corporations. So now then Congress has been fully apprised of all of this. Many senators wrote to this commission in 2002 in connection with that rulemaking and gave us comments and told us where they intended to draw those lines. And they were quite explicit about what they intended with respect to U.S. subsidiaries. In the Disclose Act of 2010, after the Citizens United ruling, Congress considered redrawing those lines again and did not pass redrawn lines. And in every subsequent iteration of the Disclose Act, it appears that Congress has abandoned an interest. If you read an act that's proposed as congressional intent, they have not revisited this issue of redrawing the definition of foreign national or the word indirect, which was the principal BICRA change. So I listened carefully at your forum, knowing that we don't draw on a blank slate. These laws have been drawn by Congress and very conscientiously drawn, amended, considered for redrawing. And I, in trying to answer the question within those parameters of the statute we have, what are we trying to address? I was struck by one of your experts that you called to your forum, and it was the legal panel with the dean. Yes, and was there a Mr. Coates on that panel?
Professor John Coates from Harvard Law School.
I apologize for not knowing the names because I have the transcript, and the transcript doesn't always tell you who's talking, so I apologize for not knowing who precisely. But I was impressed with that discussion, and there was some Q&A between you and your experts at that panel after they had finished their main presentations. And it was in the Q&A where some of these issues got crystallized in my mind. So one or two of those experts said was that the real focus of the commission or the ban in dealing with these complicated corporations is not ownership of the corporation. It is on control. And I will read the passage that struck me. I remember it was the gentleman sitting on the far right facing the audience here, if you remember.
Professor Jackson of Columbia?
Must have been him. I remember that. After discussing the difference between ownership and control, in response to some of your questions, one of them said this. I'm not sure how it was. He was discussing ownership and whether individual shareholders own each dollar in the corporation. You may remember that question. And he said, I'm not sure how much that tells us, the ownership of the assets of the corporation, about whether the money in the corporation is foreign money, so to speak. Here's why. For me, what we're more interested in is the subject you asked me about and we've been discussing, which is control of the corporate resources. And for the reasons Professor Coates gave, 1% ownership in a corporation could yield a significant amount of control. And the way to think about this, I think, is that the corporation is this box with enormous resources. And the interesting question is not whose money it is. Not a question of whether we can trace it back. The question is, who decides what happens with those resources? So there are two ways to skin that cat if the issue is control. Because ultimately it's the control of the expenditure that has the greatest potential to influence either the listener, the people of the United States, or the politician, depending on which side of the coin of the influence that you're concerned about. Now, 40 years of law here at the Commission has focused on the control issue by restricting who decides how to spend the corporate resource, who can participate. There's even a prohibition on any foreign national influencing someone else's participation in politics. And it's at that level of control over the actual expenditure-specific control that 40 years of precedent here at the Commission has focused on. Now, your article in the New York Times seems to argue for a much broader definition or focus of control. It's the blanket control of a board of directors at Fiat that oversees Chrysler USA in Detroit. And I think that's the fundamental debate, if there is to be one. You haven't told me what you think about our proposal here. But to me, when I compare your New York Times paradigm, or the paradigm that you articulated there, versus the paradigm that this proposal focuses on, that's probably the fundamental difference, is at what level of control are we going to apply this foreign national ban in the context of U.S. subsidiary corporations that are owned in whole or part by foreigners. And so what this proposal does is it takes 40 years of commission precedent that Congress has been well apprised of and seemed to countenance, certainly in the legislative history of 2002, the BCRA, and the subsequent letters this commission received. And this proposal says, absolutely, in the context of a U.S. subsidiary making either independent expenditures or contributing to a super PAC that's going to make independent expenditures or electioneering communications, there can be no foreign national who participates in the decision to spend that money. And that's the level of control at which we focus at that specific level. And it's a very tailored approach to this foreign national ban. And secondly, with 40 years of history and gloss on this, it can't be foreign money. It has to be Chrysler's money earned from Chrysler's revenues and profits in Detroit, or Ben & Jerry's profits in Vermont, since Ben & Jerry's is owned by Unilever in the Netherlands and UK. Otherwise, Ben & Jerry's and Chrysler in Detroit, U.S. companies, do not meet the definition of foreign national in and of themselves. So how do we control the foreign national influence? They use American money, and Americans make the decisions on how that money is spent. So that's point one of this proposal. It makes very clear those restrictions. And secondly, this proposal provides a certification mechanism for treasurers of super PACs and carry funds who accept for-profit donations or contributions from U.S. subsidiaries of foreign companies, for them to be to ask the question, and this is a mechanism that we use on many of the checkoffs. It forces everyone onto the key issues so there can be no mistake, you know, no misunderstanding, and it provides them a certification mechanism, which you've discussed, and we all know that safe harbors have a way of driving a lot of conduct, and so that is the mechanism through which we would draw greater attention and compliance with those rules. So that's the proposal before us, and I share this proposal with the chair and Commissioner Hunter. I'm sure any of us would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Excuse me, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I have to say I am really delighted to see your proposal. I am really excited that you guys are willing to engage on this issue. Commissioner Walther and I have been trying to get a rulemaking started on foreign nationals ever since Citizens United came down, and we tried three times in 2011 alone, and as Commissioner Walther's memo points out, I want to give full credit, we had a very detailed proposal back in 2011, a series of options on how to address the potential for foreign influence through corporations, and Commissioner Walther had a large hand in crafting those proposals. So I want to and to give further credit where credit is due, even before Citizens United, Commissioner Walther was in the forefront of expressing concern on these issues. So we tried in 2011 to launch a rulemaking on this topic repeatedly. In, I think, 2012, we were presented with an AO from Yamaha, and we, a wholly owned subsidiary, a domestic wholly owned subsidiary of a foreign company. And it became clear at that point that there was no consensus on the commission as to how to deal with wholly owned subsidiaries. We split on that AO. I just say this for the benefit of the lawyers out there, folks who are out there advising their clients based on law that predates Citizens United and are not reminding their clients that there has been further discussion and consideration of these issues at the commission since then, I think are doing their clients a disservice because it's been clear since 2011 and then again in 2012 that the commission has been splitting on these issues, that there is no longer a consensus, no longer can we get four votes to give a safe harbor for the political activities of domestic subsidiaries. In 2015, Commissioner Ravel and I presented a petition to the commission, which was subsequently withdrawn when some private citizens, including Public Citizen, whose key employee, Mr. Holman, is out there in the audience today, presented a similar petition that raised, among other issues, this issue of foreign national influence and urged the commission to take action, to do a rulemaking. We got almost 12,000 comments on those petitions. Almost all of them said, yes, go forward and do this rulemaking, and we still couldn't get four votes to do it. So I'm really glad to see people finally engaging on this topic. Earlier this year, as Commissioner Goodman has pointed out, I wrote an op-ed, took a new look at Citizens United and how it views the political rights of corporations really as vindicating the rights of the individuals behind those corporations, not that corporations have political views per se, but that the people behind them do. And the court made that even more clear in the Hobby Lobby case, a case about religious opinions, which plainly corporations don't have. And the court in 2014 said in that decision, it's important to keep in mind that the purpose of this fiction, the fiction that corporations are people, is to provide protections for human beings. A corporation is simply a form of organization used by human beings to achieve desired ends. An established body of law specifies the rights and obligations of the people, including shareholders, officers, and employees, who are associated with a corporation in one way or another. When rights, whether constitutional or statutory, are extended to corporations, the purpose is to protect the rights of these people. So we have to get back to who those people are and whether those people have the kind of rights that are being protected. What we have, you know, as my colleague pointed out, I wrote an op-ed on this earlier this year, and at the invitation of the chairman, I convened a forum in June where we invited a bunch of experts, and I really appreciate that invitation from the chairman to do that. I was hoping that bringing all those folks here would help to stimulate some discussion and get some good thoughts going, and I appreciate that everybody showed up and listened and paid attention. I do appreciate that. What we have seen, some of us have been working in the salt mines trying to get this issue going for quite a long time, and I think that it has become particularly urgent this year. We've been seeing over the course of the summer some revelations about the extent to which some foreign interests are willing to go to try and muck around in our elections. Last week in the Washington Post, an article said U.S. intelligence and law enforcement agencies are investigating what they see as a broad, covert Russian operation in the United States to sow public distrust in the upcoming presidential election and in U.S. political institutions, intelligence and congressional officials said. CBS News article came out more recently. Experts told CBS News that the ultimate goal of the hackers is not necessarily to change the outcome of the election, thank God. Their main objective is to delegitimize the outcome by sowing doubt, uncertainty, and suspicion through a series of cyber attacks. An expert at Harvard's Kennedy School was quoted saying the attackers are trying to undermine the trust in the electoral process. Earlier this week, a hearing was held, convened by Chairman John McCain of the Armed Services Committee. He invited generals and intelligence experts to come and testify. And in the wake of that, he wrote a letter to James Comey, the director of the FBI, yesterday, saying, at a minimum, these revelations serve as a warning of potential vulnerabilities in our election system. Yesterday at a hearing before this was 2 days ago now, the Senate Armed Services Committee, Admiral Rogers, confirmed that we continue to see activity of concern with respect to attempted interference in American elections through cyber means. Unfortunately, these are not isolated incidents. In the midst of an election year, the events in Arizona and Illinois likely represent a foreshadowing of our cyber adversaries' intent in stealing information, manipulating data, damaging public trust, and undermining the integrity of our elections. Any foreign interference with American elections must be treated as a threat to our vital national security interests. That was Senator McCain writing to Director Comey. So I think that this has been on the back burner for a long time, and suddenly it's gotten to be a very hot issue, and one that I think does require us to take it very seriously. We got a number of suggestions at the forum. One of our witnesses, Norm Ornstein, was talking about how, you know, we used to say back in the 50s, what's good for General Motors is good for the nation, but it's not so clear anymore in this age of globalization when U.S. companies have foreign interests and foreign interests have ownership in U.S. companies. Some of the statistics on that, which Professor Coates provided to us, are really, they really caused me to open my eyes a little wider. He stated that in the most recent update that he could find of some IRS data, about $12 trillion of assets, $12 trillion, owned by U.S. companies were controlled by foreign owners. That is 51% or more controlled by foreign owners. Back to 1982, about 5% of all U.S. corporate stock was held or controlled by foreigners. Now it's up to 25%. So there's an awful lot of foreign money in our, certainly in our businesses. And as one of our witnesses at the forum also pointed out, people are not immune from understanding what their bosses want them to do. There's all sorts of discussions that take place between domestic operatives, even United States citizens who are running domestic companies, and the foreign bosses who ultimately will decide whether they keep their jobs and what's going to happen with that domestic subsidiary. Influence can be, and suggestions can be conveyed in all sorts of ways. When you hone in on specific decisions about specific expenditures, it kind of reminds me of some of the debates we've had over coordination, and how it's been the position of half the commission that unless someone handpicks an ad, then we don't have to worry about whether there should be any donor disclosure, whether that was coordinated, because it has to be that specific, a connection. And I think there's all sorts of ways that a foreign owner can convey their views of how they would like things to go in the U.S. without handpicking an ad or dictating the exact words of that ad. And I'm a little concerned when I hear you talk like that, that is the level of specificity that you would require. I am delighted to see the acknowledgement in your proposed policy at pages 10 and 11 that we really have not done anything post-Citizens United, which I think everyone knows was a game-changing decision, to clarify the rules on a lot of activities post-Citizens United. As you say, because all U.S. corporations were prohibited from making contributions, expenditures, independent expenditures, and electioneering communications in connection with federal elections prior to these developments, the Commission has never formally clarified how the foreign national ban applies to such activity by domestic corporations that are owned or controlled by foreign nationals. So I'm really delighted to have that acknowledgement and to have this momentum for trying to provide some of that guidance. I will note that there's, you know, reference to in here to contributions to super PACs, I think, or independent expenditure only committees, and we have yet to define that term formally in a rulemaking here either. So we could put that on an agenda for a later discussion. When we held our roughly the same time as our forum, Professor Tribe of Harvard and Scott Greatak put out an op-ed in the Boston Globe, and we have copies of it out in the lobby area for people who missed that, talking about how the Saudis have obtained a large share of Uber and are using, and now Uber is getting much more involved in a lot of local political issues, spending millions of dollars sometimes. There was an article in the New York Times recently, and Professor Coates alluded to this also, about a Chinese corporation, Anbar, I think is the name of it, that has been buying up a lot of corporations in the United States, in the United States. They tried to buy an insurance company, and there were some disclosures that were required as to who their owners were, and they refused to provide them, and as a result were not allowed to buy an insurance company in the United States. But they have other holdings, and those holdings, under your proposal, would be able to make expenditures in U.S. elections. We had a number of suggestions from our panelists in June about potentially using a 5% foreign ownership threshold, which is something that crops up in SEC law as an addition of somebody with a significant interest and potentially a controlling interest, ability to control what goes on in the corporation. As a potential indicia. So what I've been trying to do is to launch a rulemaking that would consider all of these ideas. And I am delighted to see that you know, you've put some on paper this week, too. And I think they should be incorporated into the rulemaking, as well as the ideas that Commissioner Walther had a hand in crafting back in 2011, as well as some of the other ideas that were proposed at the forum and in my op-ed. And I think the notice of proposed rulemaking that I would like to see us launch should incorporate all of our ideas for that and should provide an opportunity for public comment, which if we were to adopt a policy statement today, there would be no opportunity for public comment on that. And I think that's one shortcoming of your proposal. The policy statement itself states at the end that it's not binding on the commission. So, because if it were binding on the commission, it would have to be a rulemaking. It's a not-so-safe safe harbor to put out to say, well, we're going to tell you this, but we're not really bound by anything that we say in this document. So I think, again, that's an argument for doing it through a rulemaking rather than through a policy statement. But I do appreciate that you picked up this notion of certifications, which I think can be a useful device for helping to assure the American people that there isn't foreign money being spent in our elections, that people are not trying to use that venue to muck around in our elections. That there isn't foreign control over some of the spending that's going on, whether or not they are handpicking ads or specifically dictating, I want you to spend X number of dollars in this particular race, as opposed to some more generic, gee, it would be, you know, good for business if this candidate won rather than that one. But so I'm not going to be able to support the policy statement that you all put on the agenda today, but I would be happy to support incorporating it into a notice of proposed rulemaking and adding it to other options that we could put out for public comment in hopes of trying to reach some kind of consensus going forward.
Commissioner Goodman.
You covered a lot of ground there, and I understand you feel passionate about the issue. Some of the issues you raised we could probably discuss on the agenda item with your proposal, but I do want to respond to one point you made about our proposal, and that is, I think, what is a mischaracterization. This commission has 40 years of precedent, both in the enforcement context and copious advisory opinions.
All of it predating Citizens United.
No, some of it postdating, including, I might add, MER 6401, decided by a 5-1 vote on June 13, 2011, in TransCanada Keystone Pipeline GPLLC, where this commission found no reason to believe that subsidiaries of Canadian company TransCanada had violated the principles articulated in this proposal. And Commissioner Weintraub, you voted to find no reason to believe in that case. Commissioner Walther dissented. Based on these principles, that the U.S. subsidiaries, only Americans had made the decisions, and only U.S. revenues of the American subsidiaries was used to make contributions in Nebraska state races. Now, I don't highlight that except to respond. But my point is this, both before Citizens United and after Citizens United, this commission and the Department of Justice have been fully capable of preventing foreign national involvement very generally. So the one I didn't want a mischaracterization to hang out there, or that perhaps I had indicated that this is a ad-by-ad determination. The foreign national ban is very broad. The foreign nationals involved in a company can have no role whatsoever in all of the American political spending of the American company. Only American citizens. And the law is very broad. It goes beyond specific expenditure by expenditure decisions. It says they can't influence that political activity in any way. And so I didn't want anyone to be left with the misimpression that our proposal is an ad-by-ad decision. The foreign nationals cannot participate in any way in the political spending of the American subsidiary corporation. I wanted to be clear on that. And people have gone to prison for that. Even American citizens who have assisted and facilitated foreign nationals in making contributions, including law firms, Hogan and Hartson, right across town here, have been punished by this agency for even assisting foreign nationals in doing this. So there is a very wide prophylactic zone, both in 40 years of precedent for this commission and in this policy. I just wanted to be clear about that. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on this motion? Commissioner Rabel?
You know, I'd just like to echo a couple of the things that were said by Commissioner Weintraub. In particular, and first I want to say that I am happy to see that you are engaging on this subject and that you're trying to think through what would be the best way to deal with the problem of foreign influence, which I actually think is more complicated than Commissioner Goodman gives it credit for with respect to our ability to enforce in this arena. But I thought it was most interesting the provisions in your own proposal that make clear, and there was a final clause that Commissioner Weintraub did not reference, and it says the commission also has never had occasion to apply the foreign ban regulations to the making of independent expenditures, electioneering communications, and the aforementioned contributions by domestic subsidiaries of foreign nationals. That part about the foreign ban regulations was by implication from the other. So I think that in and of itself is enough reason to say that we need more than a policy. We need actually a rulemaking. And, of course, you know, I think that we have to clarify the law first by, and we'll talk about this later, by rescinding the AO, TransCanada, which is probably what Commissioner, she can speak for herself, I wasn't here, Weintraub was relying on when she voted the way she did. But we need to rescind that AO and engage in a rulemaking. And particularly so that this is the other issue that I have concerns about that Commissioner Weintraub has mentioned, which is this policy just appeared on the agenda a couple days ago, and there's no opportunity for the public to weigh in. The public clearly is interested in this issue. It's a major concern with respect to, and I'll go into more detail about the public's comments on the AO rescission, but to date we've received almost 2,000 comments on that proposal. So people care about it. It's really important to the people of this country, and it would be absolutely remiss and inappropriate for us to engage in enacting a policy without actually doing an NPRM first. I think that that's the most appropriate way to go forward and to provide clarity, not just to the public, but to those people who have to comply with our laws.
Do we have any further discussion?
Go ahead.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yeah, I just add that we have these items coming up, and I'm not sure the best time in which to talk about some of the issues. I think I just want to give credit to the concept of the safe harbor that's in this. I think that's something we haven't really thought about to the degree that we could going forward. I'm not prepared to support the vote today, but I think that it's a interesting concept to inject into the idea of how to deal with this increasingly complex issue.
Were you going to make a motion, or I just want to make a couple of comments. I mean, obviously, we're going to have a few more items on the agenda that's going to allow us to kind of flesh out this discussion a little bit more. One thing that I think needs to be made clear and not lost in this discussion is, as we talk about what is or is not the best approach for enforcing the foreign national contribution ban, are the fact that millions of American citizens, that their free speech and associational rights are part of this calculation. According to the latest numbers, over 6 million American citizens work for corporations that are constitute domestic subsidiaries of foreign corporations. And as we consider the these approaches, that can't be lost. The Supreme Court has spoken quite eloquently on many occasions about the associational freedoms that American citizens hold and that are protected under the First Amendment. For example, in Buckley v. Vallejo, which is the seminal First Amendment case on campaign finance, it says, the First Amendment protects political association as well as political expression. The constitutional right of association explicated in NAACP v. Alabama stemmed from the court's recognition that effective advocacy of both public and private points of view, particularly controversial ones, is undeniably enhanced by group association. Subsequent decisions have made clear that the First and 14th Amendments guarantee freedom to associate with others for the common advancement of political beliefs and ideas. And similarly, that's not the only case. There was another case which we were in the caption, FEC v. National Conservative PAC from 1985, in which the court specifically held that the First Amendment freedom of association extends to PACs. And it noted that PACs, quote, are mechanisms by which large numbers of individuals of modest means can join together in organizations which serve to amplify the voice of their adherents. So in this discussion, let's not lose sight of the fact that our decisions are going to have an impact on the constitutional and First Amendment rights of those citizens. The framework that has been in place for, as Commissioner Goodman said, for over 40 years, well, for almost 40 years, for basically as long as the agency has been in existence, I think has been carefully calibrated to take into account the competing interests, the interest in keeping the campaign finance system free of foreign influence and foreign money, while on the other hand, allowing citizens who work for domestic subsidiaries of foreign parent corporations the same ability to associate with their fellow co-workers that is afforded to U.S. corporations whose operations are based solely here in the United States. And so the one thing that as I consider this matter, the one thing we want to make sure is that, you know, to borrow an old expression, we shouldn't burn down the house in order to roast the pig. In our pursuit of trying to purge the system of foreign money to the extent that, and I there still have been some evidentiary issues of trying to identify the full extent of the problem. I have no doubt that, as Commissioner Weintraub points out in her memo, that she says it would be naive or you'd be looking through rose-colored glasses if you didn't think that there were foreign operatives who aren't trying to influence our election system in some way, shape, or form. And I have no doubt that that's the case. But I don't think that's necessarily the issue. How are we going to balance the enforcement of the foreign national ban, which we all share? I mean, as we've, I think it's made clear in the discussion so far, there's no debate here at the commission about whether or not this isn't a debate between, well, foreign nationals should be able to contribute and some should and or should they not. We're unanimous on that point, and there's been a record of enforcement on that precedes said Citizens United and has occurred after as well. And I think that's been the case with the Department of Justice as well, which has vigorously enforced this. This really is a debate between what is the best paradigm that both vindicates the interests of the foreign national ban, while at the same time taking into account the First Amendment freedoms of millions of American citizens who work for domestic subsidiaries of foreign nationals. I was happy to sign on to the proposal that the Commissioner Goodman has discussed at length here, and his office took the lead on putting together. I thought it was an excellent piece of work, not only in terms of the proposal, but in terms of the recitation of the history, that this is not something that has that has shallow roots. The roots of the legal framework that are reflected in that document are very deep and go back many years. But I also want to point out that that the clarifications that are in that rule reflect what's already in existing rules. For example, in section 110.20, subsection I, this was added or modified, at least subsequent to the 2002 rulemaking, or as a result of the 2002 rulemaking, and reflects the breadth of the ban on foreign nationals, which says a foreign national shall not direct, dictate, control, or directly or indirectly participate in the decision-making process of any person, such as a corporation, labor organization, political committee, or political organization with regard to such person's federal or non-federal election-related activities, such as decisions concerning the making of contributions, donations, expenditures, or disbursements in connection with elections for any federal, state, or local office, or decisions concerning the administration of a political committee. This language preceded, this was in existence prior to Citizens United. It's still on the books. There's nothing in Citizens United which altered this in any way. In fact, Citizens United specifically, the majority in that case specifically said, we are not addressing the issue of the foreign national ban. And I just want to make clear that as we discuss this, it isn't the case that there are any obvious gaps in the legal ban on foreign national participation through contribution and expenditures in the statute and in the rules. As I said, this takes care of the direct influence as well as the indirect. So any discussion or suggestions that somehow if you can avoid explicitly seeking to get your company to spend in certain ways, but you're going to do it through less direct means, I believe that is already covered under this provision. So I think that needs to be kept in mind as well. But having said that, I do support the proposal. I think it's a good faith effort to try to find some common ground, some clarification. I don't think that this changes the law. Otherwise, we wouldn't need to have a rulemaking. I think that this clarifies to the extent that there was any confusion, any ambiguity out there in the regulated community. So I'm happy to support it and appreciate the efforts that Commissioner Goodman's office put into that document. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm very glad to hear you and Commissioner Goodman talk about the breadth of this ban, because it really was not clear to me looking at your proposal. And I think that, you know, as we continue to work on this issue, maybe that's an area that would require further, would benefit from further illumination as to how broad the ban is and the extent of walling off that you believe is already necessitated under the law. I know that a certain amount of skepticism was expressed at the forum, and I've heard it in other places as to how much needs to be specifically stated before people who are responsive to their bosses, who may be foreigners, will get the message. And it's worth noting that a number of foreign entities that do have ownership of domestic subsidiaries not only derive, not only are they foreign individuals or foreign corporations, but they're also foreign governments who are very much involved in their own economies and therefore in many of the companies that that are continuing to buy up assets in this country. And that was, I think, one of the issues in the Anbang case was the ties to the people in high government office or very influential people, the ruling class in China, and to what extent they were controlling the operations. I would hope going forward that maybe we could get some agreement that a company that is owned by a foreign government perhaps would be one that we would look at differently than a company that is owned by a foreign individual or a foreign corporation. You know, maybe that might raise the bar a little bit. I think there are a lot of issues that we could, I think there are a lot of distinctions that need to be made in some of the precedents and discussions that the chairman just brought up. I think implicit in that was whether we should look at distinctions between business corporations and ideological corporations, because nobody invests in business corporations in order to express political views, and nobody's going to feel disenfranchised because their stock holdings, the company that they own stock in, is not expressing political views for them, because that's not why you invest in the stock market. And of course, many people are invested in the stock market in such attenuated ways through mutual funds and pension funds that, you know, they have really sometimes no idea, not to mention no control over what's going on with the money in their portfolios. But when you talk about, so there's a distinction that we might want to look at between business corporations and ideological corporations, where people do actually, you know, the Sierra Club, the NRA, these are corporations, but, you know, people do buy in because they are want to affiliate with those political messages in ways that people who invest in IBM or Microsoft or GM really don't. I do want to say, though, that corporate PACs do not generally operate like book groups. It's not like a bunch of managers are sitting around in the lunchroom and they say, hey, let's everybody throw $1,000 into the pot and we'll all sit around and decide which candidates we want to support. That isn't the way it works. I mean, maybe there's a corporate PAC out there somewhere where that's happening, but for the most part, management is haranguing the solicitable class to get money out of them. And we had a case fairly recently where half the commission indicated high tolerance for some fairly aggressive maneuvers to extract that money from the solicitable class and get them to contribute to the PAC. And then the management decides who they're going to support. So I'm willing to bet that there are millions of Americans who are part of corporations where they get solicited by their corporate PAC who would be thrilled to death if tomorrow those PACs were outlawed and they would stop getting those solicitations. I'm a little bit less convinced that all of this corporate PAC spending is the purest exercise of people's First Amendment choices on who they want to support and who they don't. But I'm willing to take a look at, and I don't know whether legally this could be, you know, a sustainable theory could be sustained, but I'm willing to take a look at whether we might want to draw distinctions between the expenditure of corporate PAC money that is provided by individual U.S. citizens as opposed to the corporate treasury funds that, since Citizens United, have been able to be spent more directly on political activity. But again, I throw that out as an idea that I'd be willing to explore in the context of a rulemaking.
Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you. And thank you also to Commissioner Goodman for putting together this proposal and to Brandy Zare in his office. I think it's an excellent recitation of current law and something I'd be willing to support. And just wanted to comment on something Commissioner Weintraub said a little while ago that, tell me if I'm stating what you said incorrectly. I don't want to do that. That I think you said something along the lines of it would be a disservice if lawyers out there weren't telling their clients that since 2011 the commission has been splitting on some of these issues and that there's no longer a consensus regarding the political activities of domestic subsidiaries. Did I say that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And we've had this conversation before in the public, and I actually think that it's a disservice to amend what the underlying law is. And I understand you don't like, apparently, you know, the line of the advisory opinions that are outlined here in the proposal, but that doesn't change that they are existing law. And I just wanted to point that out. Of course, the only way to change that would be to amend the rulemaking, to have a rulemaking on this. Because even if we were to get rid of the trans-Canada advisory opinion, we'd still have the ENJ, which was promulgated, and we had public comment on it in 2002. So it's not, from your perspective, it's not the AOs that you seem to not like. It's the ENJ that was done after an extensive public notice and comment process, including comments from Trevor Potter, Senators Harry Reid, and John Ensign, who all supported continuing to allow U.S. subsidiaries to have PACs and take money from U.S. citizens. And again, as Commissioner Peterson and others have said, there are stringent rules in there. And yes, we do believe in the law and the rules. I know you. Every time we say that, you seem surprised, but we're here to enforce the current law and the current rules. And they say that you can't participate in deciding where to spend that money unless you're a U.S. citizen. And you're talking about the managers of PACs. My husband's going to kill me, but he's one of those. And he follows the rules, and he asks me every now and again, am I allowed to do this or that? They're very careful about what they do, and they're not. They sometimes are people sitting around talking about which candidates they want to support because they support the issues that they care about, things like regulations and, you know, things that we don't really get into. But they are American citizens. I know a lot of them, and they care about what their government is doing vis-a-vis an area that is highly regulated and they have an interest in. So there are real people behind these decisions, and the current law is, yes, they can participate. Thank you.
Commissioner Goodman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if there are no further.
I was going to make just one last little comment, just in response to Commissioner Weintraub was talking about the potential distinction between business and ideological corporations, and I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but it strikes me that the amounts of money that have been spent on independent expenditures and election communications thus far since Citizens United have been disproportionately by ideological corporations as opposed to business corporations. In fact, it seems what has been the experience so far is that business corporations, when they've dipped their toe into either contributing, I'm not aware of any instances where business corporations have made direct independent expenditures, or maybe some, but there have been examples where they contributed to groups that have then proven controversial, and that subsequently there have been boycotts or bad publicity, and that the experience for many business corporations is that they want to stay away from that as much as possible for one, not to drive away customers, because, as you say, at the end of the day, when shareholders invest into a corporation, they want to return on their investment. That's their primary concern. So you don't want to drive away customers. You don't want to anger shareholders. We both presented at a conference last week from the PLI, practicing law. I always think about PLI. Thank you for reminding me what the acronym was. And they talked about this issue. My experience, I guess anecdotally, in talking to people that I know both in private practice who are advising business corporations and also those who are in house, is the extreme caution that they take, especially if they're, again, domestic subsidiaries, to ensure that there isn't any foreign entanglement because of the potential criminal liability that could attach. And now, perhaps there are many others out there that are just reckless and are willing to push the envelope. That's just one person's experience. But at least what I've heard, what I've read, has been more the opposite extreme, is that business corporations have been very cautious in this realm because they don't want to get entangled in a criminal enforcement action. And as I said at the beginning, I do think that they have participated less. Now, I think there are individuals who own businesses, who are wealthy individuals. I think those are the people who have primarily contributed to the groups that have made the most independent expenditures. So I think there might be some irony if we distinguished between business and ideological corporations, when I think it's overwhelmingly the ideological corporations that have been spending. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a fair point, but I guess there's another category that They're not business corporations, but they're not what I would call ideological groups in the sense of the NRA and the Sierra Club, well-known groups, and everybody knows what their agenda is. But what we've been seeing over, you know, since Citizens United in particular is a plethora of groups that, you know, the kind that Stephen Colbert mocked when he said Americans for a better tomorrow, that spring up often for one cycle. They've got some ambiguous name. Nobody really knows who they are. Nobody knows where they're coming from or significantly, who's funding them. And hundreds of millions of dollars in dark money is being spent by these groups. And really, we have no idea where that money is coming from. And that is, I think, a place where I do have some concerns, because we don't know where the money's coming from. And because I think there are some fairly aggressive foreign interests out there who are looking for any avenue to, as I said, muck around in our elections. I am not completely convinced that all of the money that's being funneled through those dark money groups is money that is legal to be spent in our elections. Yet another category.
Is there any discussion? Okay. We've cut you off the last two times. Commissioner Goodman, I will now recognize you for the purpose of making a motion.
Yeah. I just wanted to be sure that Commissioner Hunter is giving her husband accurate legal advice when he asks those questions.
By definition.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move adoption of agenda document number 16-41A, a proposed statement of policy on the application of the foreign national prohibition to domestic corporations owned or controlled by foreign nationals.
Is there any further discussion on that? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
Madam Secretary, that motion fails by a vote of 3-3 with Commissioners Goodman, Hunter, and myself in favor, and Commissioners Ravel, Weintraub, and the Vice Chairman opposed. Turn to the next item on the agenda. If I can find my agenda, which is now buried under a stack of papers.
Yeah.
I'll borrow Commissioner Hunter's agenda, which is Commissioner Ravel's proposal to rescind advisory opinion 2006-15 TransCanada. That is set forth in agenda document number 16-32-A. I'm assuming I will recognize you first, Commissioner Ravel.
Thank you, Chairman Peterson. As I indicated before in the previous discussion, and much of that discussion is probably applicable to the discussion that we're going to have here, and I'm going to try not to repeat a lot of it, but we have received in 1 month since I put this proposal on the agenda nearly 2,000 comments, both from concerned citizens, some incredibly thoughtful and incisive comments that talked about some of the issues that we've discussed at the table, the ranking member of the House Administration Committee, which is the committee that oversees the FEC, as we know, lawyers.
That committee?
Yes, I thought you were. Lawyers, law professors, and nonprofit organizations. And over 99% of those comments support my proposal to rescind the AO and express grave concerns, such as we've been talking about today, about the influence of foreign nationals and foreign corporations that they're having now on our elections, particularly since Citizens United. And, you know, you've all responded since I put this on the agenda with your own proposals. As I've indicated before, I think this proposal is a preliminary to the rulemaking and actually need to be considered in tandem, because it's very important before we enter into the rulemaking, which is so badly needed in this matter, that we first clarify the law. And we know that while there has been discussion of this, perhaps even in a MER, as you indicate, after Citizens United, most of what we have considered at this agency has been previous to Citizens United and based on hold views that have absolutely no bearing on the present legal environment and factual environment that we're facing in this country. I think, incumbent on us. In fact, I think it's imperative that we revisit this and take a look at it. And I want to echo something that I think there was a little dissension about, but that Commissioner Weintraub mentioned about the fact that there's never been complete consensus even on this particular AO or on this view relating to foreign subsidiaries. In fact, there's a lot of discussion. Commissioner Walter himself was a no vote on this AO, but also Bob Lenhart has indicated a lot of concerns about the way that we have been looking at subsidiaries of foreign corporations because of the extreme difficulty of the issues of control and what control means, and in the real world, those subsidiaries are obligated to the owner. They are obligated to the owner. So whether or not there is a person at the top who is saying, you must contribute to my favorite candidate or not, by principles of corporate organization, where the fiduciary responsibilities lie, those subsidiaries have obligations to follow through on the financial and also, in some cases, political perspectives of the foreign owner. So all of these reasons sort of militate for us to take a look at this again. And I need to say that this problem that we're facing, and I know on one side of the table you like to talk about the Constitution, and someone at the as we do too, and someone I believe at your very good forum spoke about this, but anyway, she submitted a comment about it, and the United States Constitution has recognized the danger of foreign interference in the emolument clause, a very well-known clause. Sure. Of the Constitution. Did you want to comment about the emolument clause?
I think I took an entire class on the emolument clause.
Yes. Right. And it says, no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present emolument office or title of any kind whatsoever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. And this was explained by Supreme Court Justice Story, who says the clause as to the acceptance of any emoluments is founded in a just jealousy of foreign influence of any sort. And it's really significant that it says any present of any kind whatsoever. That is a pretty strong statement and justifies the concern about having intermediaries or others actually being the donors in the case of foreign gifts. I think also it's important for us to look at the way the world is now with these corporations. And I know Ellen spoke quite a bit about this, but I think it's important for us to remember that we're really vulnerable to the influence from foreign nationals through their subsidiaries in a way that was totally unimaginable a decade ago. And so it renders, I believe, the prior consideration of all these issues moot and have definitely undermined the assumptions that were part of the AO that we're considering today. First off, also, given our inadequate disclosure and failure to address issues of disclosure post Citizens United at this very commission, given what some of the professors spoke about with regard to the SEC and the fact that there is not very significant disclosure as to the contributions, political contributions, and other other issues through foreign corporations. For us to think that we're actually capable, given that lack of knowledge that we have, of determining whether there is this involvement of foreign nationals is not credible. It is not credible. And I believe in the forum, the great forum that Ellen put on, what Dean Donald Tubin, who we talked about, he summarized it really well. I love this. And I think I've even seen it in some of the cases that have come before us. He says, considering the existing rule that foreign nationals are prohibited from engaging in electioneering communication, in simple terms, a foreign individual could create a Wyoming corporation. The Wyoming corporation could be the sole owner of a Delaware corporation. That, in turn, could own a Nevada corporation. The Nevada corporation could then engage in independent expenditures on behalf of a candidate. For those who don't practice corporate law, I hope I picked the four most difficult corporate states to be able to break the corporate structure. So because of Citizens United, our rules are now truly divorced from market realities. And several people in commenting on the proposal today echoed that same concern. One commenter noted, the obvious problem in the Commission's guidelines is that they ignore the reality of how corporate decisions are made. We should have no doubt, and this comment is by Mr. Holman, who I believe is perhaps still here, we should have no doubt that the campaign contribution decisions made by the American directors of U.S. subsidiaries would be influenced by the foreign owners of the company. Subsidiaries of an entirely foreign-owned company are not likely to act in a vacuum and make decisions about the company's money contrary to the wishes of the company hierarchy. So as I also mentioned, the intersection of our rules, not only with the SEC but with the IRS, means that there's a significant disclosure gap. Professor John Coates also noted in the forum, $1 in $4 in value terms in U.S. corporations is controlled directly or indirectly by a foreign owner. Now, what kind of foreign owner? Well, we don't know. It's part of the disclosure gap. It could be individuals, it could be companies, they could be governments, and of course, in many countries like China, where governments and businesses are essentially identical, and so a little hard to tease out, even if you know the country from which the investment is coming. What more fundamental feature of our government is the protection of the republic? Foreign interest and domestic interest are going to be predictably diverge. And we also have to think about the rule and the AO in terms of the people who are supposed to follow it and tell their clients about it. And it is a major concern that lawyers are advising clients based on an oversimplification of these rules and presenting a system to their clients that is ripe for abuse. For example, a recent legal memo informed clients that a U.S. subsidiary, as long as it's chartered and principally operating domestically, is not a foreign national and may participate. This obscures the fact that foreign parents may exert direct or indirect control. And many campaign finance lawyers have said that the compliance regime presents a lot of compliance challenges. Allen and Overy, for example, informs their corporate clients that aspects of potential direction or control can be more administrative challenging, and that it's incumbent on each corporation to select a reasonable method for its own operations. In a comment, one of the other comments we received, Noah Bookbinder has said it well. The FEC should recognize that legal and factual changes have rendered the current rules preventing foreign influence insufficient to the Commission's statutory mandate and should begin the process of modernizing them. And, you know, uniformly, as I said, people think that this AO needs to be rescinded and that we have to go forward with rulemaking, including Ranking Member Brady, who said, I fully support the rescission of Advisory Opinion 2006-15. Collectively, these and the, you know, 1,999, the whatever, 900, highlight the need to clarify the status of the AO and other AOs that purport to permit domestic subsidiaries of foreign contributions to make contributions or donations, either directly or through SSFs, in connection with federal, state, and local elections, so that we can give guidance to the regulated community as an important first step in enacting new rules. Thank you.
Do we have any discussion on this motion? Commissioner Gooden?
I've read many of the comments that have come in. I didn't read all 2,000 when it was about 100. I was caught up.
You read 100?
Yeah.
It's a very small number.
Well,
representative sample.
It was they were very similar. Uh-huh. I understand that American people don't want foreign money and foreign nationals donating their campaigns. I agree with that sentiment. So did Congress beginning in 1966. And we're debating here over how to go about implementing that policy judgment, not whether to implement it. We've all of us here have voted to enforce the foreign national ban. I think you and I are the most recent people to arrive at this commission, and we've even had opportunity to vote on matters involving violations of the foreign national ban, and we've done so. But there are some serious questions raised by the comment that we received from the Center for Competitive Politics signed by Alan Dickerson. And I guess, you know, he addresses his comments directly to your proposal. And so I guess I would like to start with, how do you respond to his procedural points? He says that there is a statute that says we can reconsider an advisory opinion within 30 days. And that there is no procedural mechanism for 10 years later rescinding, by the way, not just this one advisory opinion, because the rules in TransCanada predated TransCanada 2006 advisory opinion. In fact, I was curious about why you started with a 2006 when actually the opinions on which that advisory opinion are constructed began in 1978. So could you address the procedural issues raised in that comment?
Yes. Well, and I also would welcome if counsel would want to weigh in, because I consulted counsel prior to, as I always do, prior to making a particular recommendation. As you know, every AO ends with a statement that says that it's premised on the facts, and it says it in TransCanada, by the way. The Commission emphasizes that if there is any change in any of the facts or assumptions presented, and that such facts or assumptions are material to a conclusion presented in this advisory opinion, then the requester may not rely on that. It's my view, and I think it's others, that these are material facts that they've changed, that the just the enactment of Citizens United since that time presents significant anyway, changes, as I've indicated before, and revisiting conclusions and advisory opinions is something we do all the time. It's something that we've done in the past. Last year, by vote, six commissioners agreed to revise an advisory opinion in the reporting of IEs that run in multiple states in an interpretive rule. So, well, we didn't do that, but we agreed to do that. So it's absolutely within our purview.
So why didn't you propose an interpretive rule? I mean, I'm just looking at the procedural mechanism of being asked to rescind an advisory opinion that's been in existence 10 years, and I think the intent of it is really to go after about, a dozen to 20 advisory opinions going back to 1978 if we really were going to rescind the whole rule. So, but the proposal before us is to rescind one and its lineage. I guess I don't know that it's procedurally that we're procedurally capable of doing it the way it's postured. And the facts and assumptions...
Maybe we could...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
I don't know whether your counsel willing to weigh in on this at the moment, since I received counsel...
Well, the key phrase in that question is, I think, at the moment. We've been consulted informally by numerous commissioners' offices on this question, and we've given informal advice, the same informal advice to each commissioner's office that is asked. Given that this is an open meeting, I'm not sure that this would be the venue to repeat it, but if there's commission interest in a more formal opinion, we can always provide that in a separate venue.
Is it possible to at least ask a question? As far as you are aware, has there ever been has an advisory opinion ever been superseded outside of either a subsequent advisory opinion or through a rulemaking process? Has this mechanism, as far as you know, ever been used before to rescind an advisory opinion?
The example that Commissioner Ravel gave, it almost fits that pattern. There were all six commissioners were interested in promulgating an interpretive rule that would have rescinded or superseded or otherwise done away with the Western Representation PAC advisory opinion. It didn't happen because there was disagreement as to the content of that interpretive rule, but as far as I know, all commissioners were in agreement that that interpretive rule could supersede an advisory opinion. It didn't happen. Before that, I don't know.
Commissioner Goodman, I believe you have the floor.
Well, I'm just struggling with the procedural mechanism that's presented to us, which the facts and assumptions stated in an advisory opinion refers to the facts and assumptions presented by that requester, not that legislative facts, what's happening in the world beyond that might change it. It has to do with the facts presented, and the only facts that I've heard you present is one that Citizens United changed the legal landscape, but it didn't change what TransCanada did, and Citizens United explicitly didn't alter the foreign national ban. It actually explicitly says we're not addressing the foreign national ban. So I guess I just don't know that procedurally we can just rescind an advisory opinion that a party came and obtained through the procedural mechanism of rescinding an advisory opinion, where the facts and circumstances for that requester are the same.
I disagree with you. I don't think that facts and circumstances is solely related to that particular person's situation. The circumstances have changed radically in terms of how applicable the law is, and given that this commission is so unwilling to enact rulemakings and we use AOs as substitute rulemakings when in fact they should not be, but they are used as precedents for others to follow, I think it is particularly incumbent upon us to look at this in the light of not just Citizens United, but but the world, the changing world in terms of multinational corporations, in terms of, you know, subsidiaries, American subsidiaries, and the fact that the analysis in that case was applicable to a different time, and it should be revisited. It should be revisited, in particular, if we are planning to do an NPRM, actually under any circumstances, but in particular, if we're going to do an NPRM, so that we have a clean slate.
Well, if the commission were going to undertake an NPRM, then we could clearly address this rule head on and take on an advisory opinion. It just seems procedurally that would be the more graceful way to do it.
Well, I
understand your position. I'm not particularly persuaded by it, but going to, by the way, I am persuaded that an NPRM would be the proper way to do it, not simply rescinding an advisory opinion and then vaguely alluding to a whole bunch of others that we are rescinding along with it. I believe that actually leads some vagueness so in the field. So if we were to rescind this one and vaguely anyone like it, you would, I take it, thereby remove the legal protections that all of those requesters obtained from their advisory opinions? Would that be the legal effect of a vote here to rescind advisory opinions?
I think it would express what the commission has already expressed, which is some question about the validity of the reasoning in that AO. And so the those people who are engaging in this practice would have to think about what they're doing.
Okay, while people are thinking
Definitely.
About what their
We're
rights are in that in
right.
the wake of a motion or a vote to rescind, what's the extant law in the meantime? Because my understanding what the law is, I'll tell you what my understanding is and you can react.
Mm-hmm.
It would be this regulation. Okay? This regulation that is explained in an explanation and justification that accompanied its adoption. You haven't moved to rescind that explanation and justification.
Right.
And that explanation and justification is premised on all of those advisory opinions. So even if you rescind those, the commission still adopted that reasoning anew in 2002, along with the legislative history of BCRA, and all of the comments that came from Senator Reid and others that said, no, we're not affecting the rights of American subsidiaries. So I don't know what's accomplished thereby other than adding some confusion to the field. Even if we were to undertake an NPRM, it would take time. And so the law would be in a, seems like a vague state of flux as to the requesters who got advisory opinions, but every lawyer out there would then default to the regulation as written and the E&J that explains it. And so, I mean, that's my understanding. Is that your understanding?
That's probably correct. And, you know, frankly, that for the brief period of time before we have our rulemaking, and I'm glad to hear you're supporting the idea of an NPRM as well as a rulemaking, I hope.
We'll see.
We have that situation in many of our places where there is a void of rulemaking, many. And so this would not be any different from that.
Let me jump then to getting more to the substance. Because you say that Citizens United, and Commissioner Weintraub said this as well, was the game changer that changes our legal thinking on how to define foreign national under the Act, which in turn turns to the Foreign Agent Registrations Act definition. Legally, Citizens United said nothing about that definition. I mean, I think we all have to concede. Citizens United said, we aren't passing on the foreign national prohibition. Making the argument that Citizens United somehow change political giving in the political system or expenditures is only really half true. Because while it opened up foreign nationals to make independent expenditures or to give to independent expenditure groups, foreign nationals prior to Citizens United had given to the soft money accounts of the DNC and the RNC. Foreign nationals had given to state and local candidates. And so foreign nationals and the definition of foreign national was well established aside from CU. So why is it that Citizens United fundamentally was a game changer in forcing us to try to reinterpret the definition of foreign national in the statute?
Commissioner Weintraub.
Can I ask a point of clarification? Because now I'm really confused. I thought I heard you say earlier that you all agreed that the foreign national ban was broad and capacious and prevented any foreign national from doing anything. And then I thought I just heard you say, and maybe I didn't hear it right, or maybe you, this happens when people are speaking, maybe a word got slipped, but I thought I just heard you say that you thought it was legal before Citizens United and presumably after for foreign nationals to give to all sorts
I misspoke. Okay. What I meant was corporations and U.S. domestic subsidiary. You're absolutely right.
Interesting that you equate those, though.
No. My point was that foreign nationals were prohibited from making those contributions prior to Citizens United, although corporations could. Thank you for calling that out. So corporations, prior to Citizens United, could make donations to the national, the soft money accounts of the DNC and the RNC, as well as state and local. Citizens United changed where corporations could give into maybe a different area of politics, but it didn't fundamentally change the issue that the commission has had to address for 40 years, which is corporations giving generally, and trying to prohibit that activity of foreign nationals that might touch that giving.
Yes, and I think you're looking at it a little narrowly, because while that's true, mm-hmm. What didn't exist at the time, and I, of course, was not at the commission, so I don't know what it was that the commissioners saw at that moment, but it's quite clear that the amount and the ways of giving has now expanded exponentially. And that's where all of the comments comes in, because people are aware of them. Commissioner Weintraub spoke of some of them, some of the concerns about, you know, countries, foreign countries that are associated with their businesses. All of these things have changed since that time. And that was occasioned by Citizens United and its progeny. That's the difference.
Point taken. Okay, I understand that. I wanted to clarify that, I think, because I think the point is that while the amount of corporate participation has increased, Citizens United didn't change the law. And we're called upon to implement the law in perhaps in a changed environment, but the law is still the law. So how do we...
Let me add one thing, which is that because of the independent expenditures, as I mentioned, the ability to funnel money from one LLC to another or from one 501c4 or c6 to another has changed for corporations, and we do not have disclosure rules, nor does there seem to be an appetite to have them either enact them or enforce them, but we don't have an ability at the moment to determine whether or not that is foreign money that's okay. Giving that money.
The changed circumstances.
That's right.
The lay of the world out there.
That's right.
What do you make of the fact that Congress was fully apprised of the definition in the statute and of the commission's regulations and proposed to change that in 2010, did not, and has not addressed changes in the foreign national prohibition in all the subsequent iterations of the Disclose Act. What do you make of that? Because
it
impresses me.
I actually make nothing of it. I think they had it there because there was a serious concern about this issue, and there's a serious concern about conduits and intermediaries. They even enacted criminal sanctions for it, but there was not. They were attempting to make a deal on the Disclose Act, and that's the reason, that's the only reason that it was dropped, and it does not, as far as I'm concerned, constitute legislative history to have you say that as a result, Congress doesn't want, you know, think this is an important matter.
It's not necessarily my point. Point taken. I guess my point is Congress knows how to address this in the wake of Citizens United. Right. And if Citizens United has changed the First Amendment tolerance for regulation based on your paradigm in the New York Times, that, you know, it's the ownership that constitutes, then Congress has had 6 years and has not done so. I don't necessarily read that as legislative history, but it seems to me that because Congress has always been in the forefront of changing the definition from 1966 to 1974 to 2002 to a proposal in 2010, the definition right now has been static in the law since the Citizens United decision, and clearly Congress is fully apprised. So that's my point.
Right. Well, let me respond to that. I don't know how apprised Congress is, honestly, about the functioning of our commission, but nonetheless, the point is, irrespective of Congress, we have an obligation. This is our job. Mm-hmm. We have an AO. We have a particular way of setting forth how subsidiaries can operate in giving contributions when they are subsidiaries of foreign organizations. It is incumbent on us, I think, to look at that and say, you know, that's not working. It's not working. It's not the right standard. We need to look at another way of dealing with what is an acknowledged problem. That's all I'm suggesting. I'm not changing the law. I'm not doing any of those things. I'm saying, let's say this is not an appropriate way for people to be able to shield these contributions. There needs to be more constraints, and let's go forward with the rulemaking.
Okay. But you are changing the law. I mean, you're proposing to change the definition of foreign national to a broader notion of foreign influenced money to be captured in our regulations implementing that statute, despite clear legislative history in 2002 that said that's not what we intended under this extent. We don't draw on a blank slate, and we're not a law unto ourselves. We make good on the law that Congress has given us, and the law that we have today is the law that Congress gave us in 2002 in the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, and you're proposing to broaden out from that to regulate U.S. companies and the American employees of those companies. This is 60 to 70,000 Americans who work for Chrysler USA. And thousands of employees work for Ben & Jerry's in Vermont and elsewhere. And 700,000 citizens of California who work for foreign-owned companies of one type or another. And so you are suggesting that we expand the notion or the definition of foreign national in a way that's contrary to what this commission considered that the law Congress gave us in 2002. By the way, I'm sympathetic. Citizens United changed a lot of activity. I guess I've made the point that it didn't wholesale change because American corporations that were owned by foreign nationals were already participating in American politics. But we don't write on a blank slate. We're not a law unto ourselves.
Yeah, well, you know, even in your own proposal, which we both repeated, you said that because of the IEs, because of the other aspects of corporate giving now, it's a case of first impression. It's new. It's something that calls out for a new policy, in your view, that didn't pass. But, you know, it calls out for us to revisit it. That's okay. That's my entire...
Let me ask you this one last question, Mr. Chairman, because your proposal uses new terms from the statute we have prohibits foreign nationals from making contributions and expenditures. And the regulations we have broaden that out beyond the actual making of it. Your paradigm is to expand the notion to something called foreign influenced money. But this notion. So I guess turning back for a second to the comment that the Center for Competitive Politics gave us, what's your reaction to pages 16 and 17?
I don't have it in front of me. Sorry.
Well, I'll summarize what their comment said. The proposal, this is your proposal, assumes that U.S. subsidiaries and the U.S. citizens who run them simply cannot be trusted, and that their loyalties cannot help but shift to the interests of their foreign owners. And then the comment is that this is a cynical and unproven assumption with vast consequences. It goes on to talk about how all of us at some point are paid by maybe foreign clients if you're a lawyer. And that it suggests that we should not call into question the loyalties and have suspicion about the loyalties of millions of American citizens just because of where they work. And so I guess, and it is difficult to ratify a proposal that's based on that presumption. And so I'm asking your reaction to this comment.
Yeah, well, first off, let me say, you know, with respect to the issue of those employees, I mean, those employees have the right to contribute to campaigns. There is not any issue about that. It's about the corporate-sponsored PAC. And they can do. There's no question that they, as Americans or citizens with green, or foreigners with green cards or all of the others, can participate in the political process, and that's what we want. It's the question of whether or not they can be influenced as. Commissioner Weintraub talked about, but also, I mean, there is some evidence. There was a recent study put out, and I believe one of the authors is from the University of Arizona. I could provide it to you offline, where they said that they found that political giving and political activity by employees is very influenced by CEOs of corporations. So there is evidence of that. And then just if you look at corporate structure, as I referred to before, the subsidiaries, the employees, they are all working for the corporation. The fact that they're a subsidiary, it's not an entity unto itself. They are loyal to and must do what is in the best interest or perceived best interest by the CEOs of that corporation. That's the difficulty that we have in formulating some kind of a rule here, honestly, and why we have to look at what we have set forth in the AO as being incomplete, because it doesn't actually address that problem.
But focused on the separate segregated funds, when American citizens who work for Chrysler in Detroit donate their own money to the Political Action Committee under the umbrella with the administrative costs paid by Chrysler USA, I mean, is it your position that the employees of Chrysler when they give their own money to a political association and make their own decisions about how to spend it, even if they are making decisions about what's good for the auto industry in the United States, okay? What's good for Chrysler in the United States. Now, Chrysler's owned by Fiat. Are you saying that we have to presume that those decisions are inherently disloyal to American interests when they're making decisions for their own jobs, for Chrysler and the auto industry in the United States? I mean, why do we make that presumption
right.
in this proposal?
I think that that's saying something that I never have said, nor would I ever say. I do not in any way view this as a proposal that is based on the disloyalty of American citizens. So please don't try to mischaracterize what is an actually very reasonable proposal based on our experience, which is that corporations have financial interests. They, when they contribute and when they set up, even setting up the SSFs, asking their employees to contribute to what are the interests of the corporation, it's done on behalf of the corporation, not those individual employees. Those individual employees might agree or might not. We don't know.
But assume
and
they
do. And that's the issue.
I'm sorry. I talked over
you. Yeah. No. And
but
that's the issue.
But assume they do. Assume the
right.
Assume that the employees of Chrysler give to a Chrysler USA PAC. It's their own money. Their contributions are voluntary. And even assume, for the sake of this discussion, that when they make political expenditures out of Chrysler USA PAC, they are doing so given their economic interest in their employment at Chrysler USA, which has plants across America and probably 60,000 to 70,000 American employees. Why would we take that right away with them? Because you said earlier, by the way, I'm not trying to mischaracterize you. You did make the argument about fiduciary loyalties and where they lie
That's
first.
Right.
So that, and that is the comment before us. I was asking your reaction. So you, I take it, so that's why I said you're questioning their loyalty and whether their loyalty is in American interest or it's to Fiat in Italy. And
I think their loyalty is to the corporation through the senior leadership, the CEO and the senior leadership, which happens to be a foreign corporation. That's the rule of corporate law, that is. I'm not saying anything about loyalty per se of a particular employee. And, you know, frankly, I think it's interesting that you're raising these issues because, as Commissioner Weintraub mentioned earlier in her discussion, you know, we had a case before us about PAC and contributors to a PAC who were clearly being, not foreign, but clearly being pressured to do something on behalf of the views of a particular head of that organization. And that didn't trouble the FEC. We split on that matter. You didn't think that it was within your purview. It
troubled some of us.
Yeah, it troubled me greatly.
Yeah.
But so clearly, what's the avenue? What's the avenue for dealing with the problem that you seem to think is a problem of foreign involvement in our electoral process?
I'm not sure that it is extinguishing the rights of American employees who work for Chrysler and Ben & Jerry's and numerous other foreign-owned companies to associate under an umbrella because sponsored by their employer. Because remember what this is by law. It is not the corporation. It's called a separate segregated fund for a reason. It is a separate, it is not the corporation's money. It is a separate segregated fund that the corporation merely facilitates for those employees. It takes their personal money in, and they make the decisions to spend their personal money out, and therefore there is no fiduciary duty imprinted on that separate segregated fund to fiat in Italy. There is not, because it's not the corporation's money. Now, informally, I grant you, the employees of Chrysler may want to vote the best economic interest of Chrysler in USA. They may indeed do that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that their interests are not in harmony with basic U.S. interests. So that's, a fundamental concern I have about your proposal here today. So, Mr. Chairman, I yield.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you. There were many times where I thought about trying to interject myself, but it seemed like there was no...
We were having so much fun.
And frequently what I was about to say, my colleague said anyway, so it eliminated the need. But I just want to make a couple of points. Point one, I support the proposal, which, as my colleague said, would kind of clear the decks in preparation for rulemaking that I sincerely hope we'll be able to launch. I think this notion that these thousands of employees of Chrysler or any other big company are, you know, personally invested in and exercising their choice through the PAC, I think is just not in practical reality how it works. They don't, most of these employees who contribute to the PAC have no say it. I mean, I don't know how Chrysler does it, so I don't want to pick on them, but in most big corporate PACs, the individual employees who contribute have no say at all about who gets the money. That is determined by a manager who is often hand-selected by the CEO, who is hand-selected by the foreign owners. So there actually is a connection there, and as I said earlier, you know, we know that entities that are closely aligned with the government of China have been buying up companies in the United States. We know that the Saudis have been buying up companies in the United States. I mean, let me give you the most dramatic example I could come up with. So let's just posit for a moment that three ISIS fighters who happen to have, you know, come from families with money, decide to buy an interest or buy an entire company in the United States. Are you really comfortable with that company, you know, playing in our elections? You're willing to say, oh, well, that's fine, you know, it may be owned by ISIS, but you know, these are American citizens who work for ISIS, so that's okay because they're the ones you're gonna. I mean, that is, you know, you can shake your head if you want to, but that would be okay under your theory, I assume. And that's, you know, maybe that sounds like a ridiculous example, but
yeah,
you know, I don't.
It does sound like that.
I don't know how far removed it is from foreign governments who we know have state-owned enterprises that are buying up interests in the United States. We know this happens.
Commissioner Hunter.
Just focusing in on the domestic subsidiary. So I think what you're trying to say, and I think Commissioner Goodman was trying to isolate this also, is a U.S. citizen who works for, let's just keep the Chrysler line for a minute here, a U.S. citizen who works for Chrysler shouldn't be able, I think you're saying, to contribute to the SSF because the people who work for the domestic subsidiary for Chrysler will, by definition, be influenced in how to direct that money by fiat. Is that what you're saying?
Personally, yeah. I'm saying something a little bit more moderated than that.
Okay.
I think that possibility is definitely out there, and I want to pursue that inquiry.
I'm sorry, what possibilities are out there?
That the people who are making decisions about how the corporate PAC money is being spent are being influenced in some sense or are carrying out policies that they know would be in the interests of their foreign owners.
But
I
think that
is a real possibility, that the decision about how the money is being spent, because as I said, I think most of the people who contribute to it have no say at all over how the money is being spent in most big corporate PACs. I think that's just the reality. And as my colleague said, those people are perfectly free, and nobody's trying to say that they shouldn't be spending all the money they want to contribute to every candidate they want to support the political causes that they want. Nobody is saying that that is a problem at all, whoever they work for. But what I would like to pursue in a rulemaking is, you know, what is the status of these domestic subsidiaries of foreign owners? And I think my colleague's proposal is to clear the decks for that rulemaking so that we don't have, in the meantime, people giving advice based on this particular AO.
If I could just dial down a little bit further. You said that what I said sort of overstated it. Could you state what you think it should be for a U.S. citizen giving to an SSF for a domestic subsidiary who's owned by a foreign parent? Should they be able to give or not to the SSF?
That is an issue that I want to explore in the rulemaking. And as I think I mentioned before, I'm willing to consider the possibility that we should look at SSF separately from corporate treasury spending. I don't know whether there's I haven't decided yet whether there's a legally defensible way to get there. But I'm willing to look at that.
You don't want to blanketly say that a U.S. citizen shouldn't be able to give to this SSF.
That's not what I'm saying today.
You don't want to say that. Okay. But I'm not going to reiterate what you say. I'm going to say what I think you're thinking is, but you want to have some kind of safeguard to make sure that the foreign company isn't deciding how to spend the money. And guess what? We agree with you, and that's the current law. And so I think a lot of this is talking past one another. You want to make sure that fiat is not deciding how to spend the money that people voluntarily gave to their SSF, people who are American citizens voluntarily gave to their SSF. And there are all kinds of safeguards in the reg, in the ENJ, and in various advisory opinions, which are spelled out in the proposal that we put forward today. And TransCanada themselves, from the AO that you guys want to get rid of, specifically said that there were all kinds of safeguards, strong measures taken to ensure that its activity was not swayed by foreign influence. They did all kinds of stuff, and it's in the record in that AO to say, we agree with you. We want to make sure that this money is, the decision on how to spend it is made by the American people running the U.S. subsidiary. So I actually think we agree, at least with respect to how SSF should be operated.
Commissioner Weintraub.
You may have more, I suspect you do have more confidence that, you know, there are adequate safeguards in place right now.
But I think the difference, and this comes up, this is something that's, sorry, this is sort of common in the enforcement context and here, that we're generally a little bit more willing to accept the representations of people that are made to the federal government, often under penalty of perjury. If someone attests to me that they haven't had any influence by the foreign parent, I tend to believe them, and especially contrary to evidence, you know, otherwise. And you don't. And that's just a completely different way of looking at this. You know, I actually have a friend who runs a domestic subsidiary of a huge foreign national corporation. I'm going to call him and say, you know, how does this work? He's in charge of a lot of American citizens, and I'm sure that he follows the rules and makes the decisions on his own.
Commissioner Weintraub?
With all due respect, I don't think we ought to be making government policy based on what your husband told you or what you learn when you talk to one friend.
No,
I think what we need is a rulemaking where we gather a broader number of perspectives before the commission.
In that same vein, we should also not be making broad statements on the basis of speculative theories on what may or may not be going on with corporate governance. I mean, a lot of what's been said is not based on any evidentiary record. It seems like it's a lot on speculation on what may or may not happen. So I think I think it's good advice for all of us to follow that we should be careful about how much we're relying on theoretical boogeyman to prosecute our case. But Commissioner Weintraub.
Well, I'll just say, I mean, Commissioner Goodman does this all the time. He draws on his experience as a former practitioner, as do I. And, you know, that's In my experience of advising clients, I never encountered a corporate PAC that, you know, gathered everybody together who was contributing to the PAC and took a vote or sought their input in much of a way at all as to who would get the money. So it is, I'm not drawing on complete speculation. It's informed by my experience out there in the world.
Right. And on that point, I don't think that because PACs may not meet one's idyllic notion of how freedom of association ought to operate in the perfect world, and I don't think that freedom of association and the freedom of speech, I think that the founding fathers were not Pollyanna-ish in their views either. In fact, I think that many of them had very dark impressions of what basic human nature was. But I don't think that, again, because some ideal is not met, that one's associational freedoms are somewhat diminished. And that's why I was a little bit troubled by the suggestion that because American citizens who are employed by a domestic subsidiary of a foreign corporation, well, sure, I'm not talking about infringing upon their rights, since they would still have the right to contribute. I think that really does give short shrift to the associational freedom that that the Supreme Court has talked about at length. I don't think the Supreme Court is under any delusions over how PACs or other associations operate, but I don't think just because they don't meet what we would think would be the perfect world of what how associations ought to operate and how the decisions within those associations operate, I don't think that diminishes their freedom to associate at all. And so I'm troubled by that suggestion. You were reaching. I'll let you respond to that. And then there was just one other question. It's about 1 o'clock. So
we want to keep
why don't you respond?
Well,
there was one thing I wanted to ask, and then I was going to suggest maybe taking just a quick break, and then come back and resume consideration. And
I don't know why we don't just take a vote. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Well, we move.
Well, you can finish.
Okay.
Finish what you were going to say.
Let me just. We've talked kind of around this issue a little bit, but I'm not sure it's been addressed directly. In Commissioner Weintraub's memo and in your the memo attached to your motion, talks a lot about Citizens United being this game changer, how the line of advisory opinions that established the framework for domestic subsidiaries of foreign corporations to be able to establish political action committees and to engage in expenditures were permitted by law, that somehow when Citizens United came down, was handed down, that changed everything. Now, I can understand to some extent how that changed. It obviously worked a large impact in general, but let's dig down to this specific issue. It did expand now that the corporations who could only previously make independent expenditures and contributions on the state and local level were permitted by law. They could now do so at the federal level. But I've got to say, for the life of me, I do not see how that was a game changer with respect to domestic subsidiaries of foreign parents and their ability to establish PACs. Because before, the only thing that a corporate PAC can do, that a corporation that is the sponsoring organization for a corporate PAC, is they can pay to, you know, it talks about the establishment, administration, and solicitation costs. And I read earlier the from 110.20, talking about the broad prohibition on foreign national involvement, direct or indirect, on any decisions. And there was nothing post-Citizens United that altered any of that. So, I'm not saying this to be glib or sarcastic or anything. I honestly do not know how, with respect to the corporate PACs of domestic subsidiaries, how Citizens United had any impact on it whatsoever. Because whatever avenues of leakage there were before were still there after, or I should better say that anything that happened after were still there before. So that's the one assertion that I've had trouble with all along. Because to me, I think that the framework has remained the exact same, at least with respect to those corporate PACs. So that's if one of my colleagues can enlighten me about how that framework changed, I'd I'd be interested to hear it. But I just, like I said, in all of my analysis of this issue, which is, I don't think I've ever drafted up more talking points for any open meeting before, but that's one issue that I just don't understand. And if we can't agree on anything else, if there were ever just agreement on that issue, that framework for that hasn't changed, that would be helpful. And then the issue about independent expenditures and contributions and all that you know, that we can have that as a side discussion. But I would throw that out for consideration. And if we want to think about that for a second, why don't we take a brief, like, 5-minute break, and then meet back here, and then we can make a motion. I apologize for not mentioning that, as with respect to this particular agenda item 10 is a statement of Commissioner Walther regarding this motion. And that really should have been included as part of this agenda item. So I don't want to give short shrift to that as well. And so we want to make sure that you get the full chance to address that as well. Commissioner?
Maybe we could proceed to a vote on this and then take a break.
Okay. Okay.
Why don't we do that?
Then let's make the motion so that at least we can put a check through item 7 on our agenda.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And then we'll come back afterwards and proceed as, you know,
thank
as
you. Board.
Commissioner Rabel.
I move approval of agenda document number 16-32A, proposal to rescind advisory opinion 2006-15.
We have a motion on the table. Is there any further discussion on that motion? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No.
Madam Secretary, that vote fails by that motion fails by a vote of 3-3, with Commissioners Ravel, Weintraub, and the Vice Chairman in favor, and Commissioners Goodman, Hunter, and myself opposed. So why don't we take a 5-minute recess, and then when we come back, we will pick up agenda item 9, which is Commissioner Weintraub's proposal. Agenda item number 9. Which, as I mentioned before the break, that it is a proposal to launch rulemaking to ensure that U.S. political spending is free from political influence. This is a memo from Commissioner Weintraub, reflected in agenda document number 16-40-A. Commissioner Weintraub.
Can you add that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For
discussion purposes.
Yeah, for discussion purposes, this also will incorporate item number 10, which is the statement of Vice Chairman Walther regarding the proposal to rescind advisory opinion 2006-15 TransCanada. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I feel like a lot of the ground has already been covered, and I'm not proposing to repeat all of that again.
But just for fun, maybe we should.
Just for fun, really? Or did you think that was so much fun?
No.
I did. So. You have an odd idea of fun.
Scintillating, I'd say.
As I said earlier, this is a topic that I've been interested in pursuing for a very long time, and I think it has particular urgency now, this year, given everything we've been reading about in the news, given all the good information that we got at the hearing, which I really am very, very pleased. I was very excited to hold the hearing, and I was very pleased with all the information that we got there, and was very pleased to have my colleagues there and so attentive. And I know that you've all looked at the transcripts. And by the way, if anybody missed it, it's all up on my webpage with videos and transcripts and audios and any way you want to imbibe the information. There was so many good ideas there, talking about what actually constitutes ownership and control in the foreign national context, raising a lot of good ideas there. John Pudner has an idea that I know he's also pursuing on the Hill, but I think we could consider it here, too, in the context of a rulemaking about requiring that people who take credit card contributions get that 3-digit verification code number from the back of the card. I don't see any reason why we couldn't consider that, too, in the context of a rulemaking. I'm happy to consider the proposal that my colleagues have suggested earlier in the day and look into whether there's something we could come up with that we would agree on involving certifications or safe harbors. I'm willing to look at it every which way. And what I would propose is that we, you know, but as I've said to my colleagues offline, I really don't want to go make our long-suffering legal staff draft another long, complicated document going nowhere. So I want to get buy-in on the front end. I mean, I've heard intimations in the course of the day that maybe there's some interest in doing this, but I really think this is critically important for us to do, for us to take on. And there are many, many issues we disagree on, but there's been a lot of agreement expressed at the table about the importance of this issue of ensuring that we don't have foreign money in our elections. And I really hope that we could try and come together and craft something that and collect public comment. I mean, my forum was in part designed to try and persuade you that there are real issues out there and that there are smart people who are thinking about them and coming up with good ideas for us, but that was just obviously a small subsection of the people that I would hope would comment on a real NPRM. If it looked like we were really willing to tackle this in a serious way, that several of the commenters at the hearing pointed out that, you know, given what we're seeing out there in terms of these very sophisticated intrusions into our political system that are coming from abroad, you really would, as I said in my memo, have to be wearing some pretty rose-colored glasses to think that there couldn't possibly be any foreign money sneaking in through some of the dark money vehicles that are out there. And yes, I would love to tackle that issue of the dark money vehicles and bring more sunlight to that, but I'm trying to focus this in more narrowly on the issue of foreign nationals. So, you know, maybe this one's not so controversial. So I'm going to cross my fingers and make a motion, and obviously that's not to close off any debate. I'm happy to hear anything that anybody wants to say, and I purposely made this very open-ended. I move that the Commission open a rulemaking and direct the Office of General Counsel to draft an NPRM. It's a notice of proposed rulemaking for those of you out there who are not in the weeds on our FEC lingo, that would allow the Commission to consider every option for reducing the potential for foreign spending in our elections, taking into account the views of every commissioner and all the good information that we already have in front of us, and I'm sure we would get many more good ideas if we opened this rulemaking. So I really, really hope that maybe we could move forward on this.
Is there any further discussion? Mr. Vice Chairman, I don't know if you wanted to speak to the agenda document that you made blue.
That's pretty much speaks for itself. I had occasion to address the issue back in 2006. I felt that, and I still think the answer to the issues that you know they confront us, especially are more acute now because of Citizens United, where we can argue all day as to whether or not there's been a nuanced change by the fact that its adoption, but certainly the volume of money resulting from Citizens United in all areas has become so great that I think there's a concomitant amount of foreign money, if not more, percentage-wise, as we go forward. And I think we have a greater need for that reason to take a good hard look as a commission, give it our best professional judgment, try and do our best. If we can't, at least the process will have been educational for the public and for Congress. We will be seen to have tried to do the best we can with a difficult situation, and it may ignite some interest in Congress to actually do more on their own to try and give us more guidance. I recognize that my colleagues are reluctant to adopt a rulemaking when Congress has not passed anything and attempted to, some people in Congress attempted, and I think mightily, to give guidance in the past, and it was unsuccessful, but that I think there was more than 50% vote on that issue, just not enough to get it adopted. But certainly there's a lot of interest in Congress. I think we should give it a shot. I think, professionally, it's within the purview of our jurisdiction to give guidance in this area, and we ought to do that. So there's a number of different suggestions that have been made as to how the rules might play out, and there's new suggestions today in connection with the one that we previously voted on regarding certification issues. I think that's interesting. It certainly could be incorporated in a number of different ways. I should point out that in 2006, when I made my statement, I did point out that PACs at least deserve a different analysis on the issues than with respect to direct contributions and that kind of thing. So I think there's room to try and make a good series of rules that will staunch most of the money coming in, a good portion, much more than now, that is foreign of nature, and still not impede good business, which we all think we've essential to our nation also. So I'm hopeful that this process and the efforts by all commissioners so far will precipitate some action. I also don't think we can give promising guidance other than through rules and giving the public a chance to participate. Maybe Congress wants to participate. We got a letter or two, I guess, in connection with a recommendation by Commissioner Ravel. Hopefully, we could, maybe they'd want to have a hearing and talk about it and invite us. So I'm glad we have this process going today, and hopefully we'll make some headway.
Commissioner Goodman.
I may we may come full circle now. We've said a lot. I have listened, and I think I was comfortable with the proposal we made to address this issue of U.S. subsidiaries. And I'm not sure that in the breadth with which this proposal is written, I'm ready to take a leap today without looking where we're going to land. It seems a little bit all possible options. When I think we can address this issue with the rule that we propose today to limit the decision-making to U.S. citizens using U.S. income. Because also, not only does it say all options, but Commissioner Weintraub, you have stated what your ultimate option is in the New York Times, which is referenced in this
proposal. I'm willing to consider anything. I am not saying it. I apologize for interrupting you, but I just want to be really clear on this. What I wrote in the New York Times was intentionally provocative. Yes. It was intended to stimulate discussion, and I hope that it has. But I am not saying today that is the only thing that I would consider, or there aren't many other ideas that I think would be well worth entertaining and that I might ultimately support.
Okay, fair point.
Including yours.
Although you did start today saying that lawyers are advising people on the wrong law today. And so I'm not prepared to open up, I guess, that Pandora's box today, given that you've already expressed that there is a zero tolerance standard. Your proposal in the New York Times, which informs where I think you want to go with this vehicle, you know, when I look at the matters we have decided on the foreign national since 2010, I wasn't here for the Trans-Canada one, but it followed that general paradigm. It followed the paradigm that's been in existence for 30-some years. So your proposal in the New York Times contradicts that. Then there was this matter called Canseco for Congress. And I guess I'd ask you, how does your paradigm that you published in the New York Times apply to Canseco, where a Mexican company gave money to the American candidate? The American candidate owned a Texas holding company, a U.S. domestic. So American citizen owned the Texas company, and the Texas company owned the Mexican. Is that an American citizen, or is that a foreign citizen? My point is that we applied the basic paradigm of looking at the basic definition of foreign national as recently as MER 6919, which was decided in 2016. We said, nope, that's a Mexican company. And we voted 6-0 to punish the Mexican company and the American citizen, even though He, a Texas American citizen, through his Texas holding company, owned that Mexican company. So we'd have to unravel a lot of those issues, and I'm not sure I'm prepared to shift from that basic paradigm. There was also the case that I was recused from, but it's public, and that was a case involving Russia Today Network. And so I guess I would ask you, under your theory that 1% spoils the whole, or one wags the whole dog, 1% characterizes the whole association as foreign, how do you then treat wholly owned American media companies like Russia Times or Al Jazeera America? How do you treat, how does your paradigm apply to the New York Times, which is owned 17% by Carlos Slim from Mexico and is publicly traded? So I assume the ownership of the New York Times probably goes over 20% when you account for Carlos Slim's 17%. Are we going to have zero tolerance for that type of foreign spending and discussion of American politics? SEIU and dozens of international trade unions employee labor unions. The SEIU touts that it has hundreds of thousands of members in Canada, and yet it's a prolific maker of American independent expenditures. So when you say all options, I want to know a little bit more about where I'm going to land and have some greater notion than to just open it up and see where we land. And that's, I guess, my primary concern with voting for this today. We can take more time to discuss it, but I'm not comfortable moving forward with it today.
Commissioner Weintraub.
You know, I kind of feel like I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. If I give you a specific proposal, then you're going to take it apart and say, no, I don't want to do that thing for this reason. If I say I'm willing to consider all options, you say, oh, it's too open-ended. I don't know where we're going to land with that. And what it really sounds to me is like you're not willing to consider making any changes at all to the current situation. Now, I said, and I'm going to repeat this, that I am willing to consider, I am not looking to find a path to codify the ideas that I put forward in my op-ed. I am willing to consider all options, including the ones that you put forward today, which I thought were not well suited to a policy statement and would have to be done through a rulemaking. And you insist, you know, you started out from the place of saying, well, I'm just going to ignore what you just said and instead assume that what you really want to do is what you said you didn't want to do, which is to find a way to codify the ideas in your op-ed. That's not where I'm trying to go with this. I have not prejudged the issue. I have not prejudged where we have to land. So if you think that we need to figure out in advance what the rule is going to say and make sure we have four votes for it before we even put out a notice and seek public comment on different options, then that to me is a recipe for never getting anything done, which is, in fact, what we've been doing around here for the last 6 years since Citizens United passed, getting nothing done in terms of accommodating our rules to that decision. And that is, you know, I thought there was, when I was listening to what people were saying before, I thought there was a slim chance. I wasn't overly optimistic, but I thought there was a slim chance that people might be open to talking about this. But, you know, if you say no today, you know, when are you going to say yes? That you will have ample opportunity as OGC is drafting this to say, you know, I want to consider this and not that. Oh, that idea is just too crazy to even put out for public comment. I'm willing to talk to you about that. I'm willing to engage with you on these issues. But, you know, what I'm hearing from you is that we put our proposal on the table. That's the only thing, which is basically codifying, you know, what we believe, what you guys believe to be the law today. We're not willing to consider any other options. And that means wholly owned subsidiaries of foreign governments, in your view, can go ahead and spend money in U.S. elections. And, you know, you can scoff at my example of the, you know, ISIS fighters who decide to buy a company in the United States. But what would stop them from doing that in your paradigm? How can we assure the American people that all these dark money groups are not spending one penny of foreign money when they're running their ads and they don't disclose any of their donors? I'm looking for a path forward here. It doesn't have to be my ideal path. It certainly doesn't have to be what I put forward in my op-ed. But, you know, as other people besides me have said, we're kind of in a situation of national crisis affecting our national security, our political integrity, knowing that there are people outside of our borders who really would like to influence our election, who would like to muck it up, spread disinformation. How better to spread disinformation than through some dark money group? And, you know, you say you're not willing to consider even starting the rulemaking. You want to shut it down at the beginning and not consider any options for moving forward? To me, that shows a high degree of tolerance for allowing a whole lot of uncertainty out there as to whether foreign money is coming in, and an unwillingness to consider doing anything constructive on this topic.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Goodman.
I think we did take a position that we thought was constructive today. We did set clear rules on who can make the decisions, what kind of money can be used, with clear restrictions on foreign involvement in that, and a new certification process, which you yourself said was constructive. But then let me just ask you, if you're worried about disinformation in the public and foreign influence, what is your position on foreign-owned media enterprises like Russia Times or Al Jazeera America? I believe it's now closed, but things like that. But, you know, what is your paradigm? Because the only way I've heard it expressed is in your New York Times piece. Please don't fault me for reading you and taking you seriously. I'd
also like you to listen to me today.
Okay. I'm listening to you today. You do not think that what you said in the New York Times is the law today?
I do not think that's the only option that we can consider. In a rulemaking, we could set new rules. That's the whole point of a rulemaking. And if you want to raise the issue in that rulemaking, I think it's actually a very interesting issue that we have not taken a position on yet. How do the rules on media ownership, on the media exemption, and the foreign national ban? What's the interplay between those? I don't think that's a topic that the Commission has addressed yet, but we could consider it in this rulemaking.
So you would consider your proposal would contemplate taking up then foreign ownership of the New York Times as potentially tainting the New York Times as a foreign national?
If you want to consider media entities and the foreign national ban, I am willing to consider that in the context of this rule.
I'm not proposing it. I'm asking it's your proposal. I'm testing the boundaries of what I'm being asked to vote on.
I'm saying I'm willing to throw anything in that will get four votes for it.
And the labor unions as well, that you're contemplating taking up international labor unions?
You know, the amount of resources that are available to corporations in this country dwarfs by a factor of 1,000 or more, I think. I don't have the statistics on me right now, the resources that are owned by labor unions. But if you want to throw labor unions in, you know, that's why I want to focus on corporations, because that's where the money is. But, you know, if you want to throw unions in there, I'm happy to throw that in too.
Mr. Chairman, I would need more time to consider all these.
I will just say that, you know, you want more time, I'm happy to talk to you anytime and hear what you have to say. But I started talking about this, well, I started talking about doing a foreign national rulemaking in 2010. You weren't even here then, but I have certainly put it on people's, should have been on people's agenda since at least March of this year. So you want more time? Absolutely. Tell me when you're ready. In the meantime, I'll make a motion whenever it's appropriate.
Okay. And I commend you for raising the profile of this issue, because, to be honest, I've examined it and just gone back and looked through all sorts of documents that I've never pored through to get a better grasp on this issue and the full implications of it. And I think that, and I give you credit for spurring a conversation on the larger public, and also, I think, an investigation amongst commissioners themselves on what the lay of the land is and what would be potential implications of changing the lay of the land. The concern I have is, a wise person once told me that it's generally not the best course to undertake a rulemaking without a clear idea of where you might land. And the wise person was you, Ellen. I remember you when we first got here saying that
there's.
I can give you credit. I think that just from the discussion we've had here and the motion that we had on Commissioner Ravel's, that left the realm of the speculative, and now we were actually voting on a proposal to rescind AOs and presumably an entire line of AOs and the underlying legal framework that those represented. And the concern I have is, are our first principles when we start this exercise, are we just on two different planets? We're the proposal that we had was operating within the lines that have been set forth since 1978 about how the associational freedoms of domestic subsidiaries will still be intact, provided that there are precautions that are in place about preventing influence of foreign nationals over decision making, no solicitation of foreign nationals for contributions to a PAC, and also that if there are expenditures made, that it only comes from domestically generated revenue. And so that is the paradigm within which we're operating. And at least I think that Commissioner Ravel expressed this. I don't know if the others did. I believe your concern is that just by definition, domestic subsidiaries of foreign corporations, there's no way that they can truly be independent. And if that's the case, and if that were shared by the others, then our starting points so disparate that there's really not a place we could land. Because if we're in this world where a single foreign shareholder dollar kind of taints the organization, so publicly traded corporations, then that would make it difficult even for us to come to an agreement on a certification regime where we would say, okay, well, let's at least agree that PACs and others certify that the money that they received is not from a foreign national, and that a foreign national was not in any way involved with any decision-making process. If we have totally different ideas of what a foreign national is, if we believe that by that you mean not from a foreign national, that no foreign national was involved in the decision, and that any monies were from domestically generated revenue, if that's what we're thinking, but you're thinking that if anything were to come from a corporation that has foreign shareholders or a significant number of foreign shareholders, then even that becomes a difficult hill to climb. So what I'm saying is that I don't want to foreclose the possibility of us trying to find some common ground, because I think that our interests in enforcing the ban are there, but I think that there may need to be a little bit more discussion or legwork to figure out, are there some first principles that we can start from that would allow a potential compromise to be reached?
Can I interject to respond to your comment?
Because, and if I mischaracterize you, please.
I think you do, and maybe I portrayed that in a way that made you think that, but what I was saying was, in the AO, in the Trans-Pacific AO, those constraints were insufficient.
Trans-Canada,
insufficient to ensure that there really isn't foreign influence. And that's the concern. I mean, if we were to devise some scheme that comes up in the for an SSF that comes up in the course of the rulemaking, where we would get information from people and be able to consider ways to have that clear assurance that in despite the corporate structure that we could put in, and I don't know that certification would be the thing that I would feel comfortable with necessarily, but some way that would enable us to even enforce that rule. I think what we have now, we don't have the capability of enforcing the prohibition on foreign nationals. That's what I was trying to communicate.
Because the concern I had had about the earlier comments was the statement that one cannot help, even if someone who's an American citizen and who's on the board of directors and is in charge of making decisions for a domestic subsidiary's PAC or independent expenditure effort, if the notion is that they can't help but be influenced by the fact that I've met the foreign national who's owned this organization, and therefore just the way in which the corporation is organized, you can't help but be influenced by that foreign source. If that's what I thought was being said earlier, in which case that would have seemed to exclude all domestic subsidiaries. So maybe that wasn't...
That was not my intention.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub.
Corporations, domestic subsidiaries that are wholly owned, 100% wholly owned by foreign governments. Mm-hmm. Is that a topic you'd be willing to address through rulemaking? Are you willing to say, as you're sitting here today, that you are completely comfortable that a wholly owned subsidiary of a foreign government, that it's perfectly fine for them to be spending as much as they want in U.S. elections as long as there's somebody who's a U.S. citizen who's cutting the checks?
I think that would certainly narrow the range considerably, and I'd be willing to talk with you about that. I think there is a difference, and can be a difference between foreign government owned versus foreign national owned. If we were able to, what I'm saying is I don't want to end the conversation and end the discussion, because if there is some way, even if we end up with something that we're not even all that satisfied with, because we all have to give, but we find that it moves the ball and lends a little more clarity, I don't want to foreclose that. But like I said, during the course of the conversation, there have been some positions that had been advanced, which made me concerned that even kind of a lowest common denominator approach might be difficult to.
Mr. Chairman, could I?
Okay. Mr. Vice Chairman, and then Commissioner Ravel.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'm a little dismayed that at least the two of you are trying to not have a public comment period, even an ability to look at what all the possible solutions might be in advance, and saying, well, because we think you prejudged it. I mean, I feel that what you're doing is saying we can't even have a thoughtful discussion of these issues when we're saying that we want that discussion, that we want to be open, we want to hear what the public has to say. We think it's so important, so crucially important to talk about these things. And admittedly, this is a complicated issue. It's not a simple issue. And I think we all believe that. We're not, here to just do a knee-jerk response. What we're trying to do is just get input from people all over the country. And if you, I know you don't like real people, but academics and
I am real people.
Yeah,
so
right.
My kids at public
I've heard that
and,
been said. I think that really we want to get a lot of people who have given thought there were many of them at the forum. There's lots more of them all across the country, I'm sure, who would want to weigh in on this subject and give us guidance in how we can formulate some of these responses. And to just foreclose that, I think is really kind of a sad thing for us.
Mr. Commissioner Goodman? I think the vice chairman, I want to recognize you.
I'm sitting in a bad spot here today.
I think the tennis ball's been flying back and forth in front of the net a few times.
I just want to add this. I think, as I've been told, when Congress adopted BCRA, there was a requirement that the Federal Election Commission had to adopt rules within a certain period of time.
That's true.
And when the Congress told the Federal Election Commission that they had to adopt regulations, they did it. Very diverse, brand new theories, brand new thoughts, brand new everything. They were told, listen, you have to agree and come up with rules. They worked day and night, and they did it. I see it no different here. We have different ideas, but little cracks in each person's, or in each of our thinking that could make for a deal. And I think that we should put self-imposed deadline, maybe get a procedure that we agree on how we're going to go about it. I frankly think that we ought to consider getting some, invite a team of people who are experts in the field of campaign finance, not campaign finance, of corporate structure organizations. One of the things Citizens United has done is invited corporations to participate in our electoral process to an unprecedented degree. And there are all sorts of different combinations, whether a corporation is formed and is a partner with a limited partnership, or whether there's half shares that are voting and half are non-voting shares, whole different ways in which control can be given up and still get the benefit of the wisdom of the people who have voting shares, who then select the board of directors. There's a whole different slug of combinations that we could look at that probably satisfy our needs. But bear in mind, the law is what the law is. Foreign money is not to intrude into our electoral system. So we have to be guided by that no matter what. The second one is we don't want to interfere with our ability to engage in a free enterprise system. And so I think it can be done. I think you could look at the combination of corporations. You could look at a combination of people on boards of directors. You could look at certain issues with respect to PACs. I think there's an argument, and after all, it is the money of the shareholders. They would have a say, and it could be probably structured to give them pretty much of a guaranteed say for their own money within some tolerable limits, I assume. But I really think that it's a matter of us deciding whether or not we're going to do this. If we make that decision, I think it can be done. But so that's what I'm looking for, is maybe some kind of a deadline that we give ourselves and a commitment.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I think that the deadline idea is a constructive suggestion. What I hear my colleagues saying is we don't like all of your ideas, and therefore we're not willing to consider any of your ideas. And that, to me, does not really have any path forward. All we're asking is to, get our lawyers drafting something. You would obviously have ample opportunity to review the document. And if there was something in there that you found so outrageous that you thought, well, I would never, ever, under any circumstances, ever support that, so no point in even having it in there. We can, there's plenty of opportunities for crossing things out. But all we're trying to do is start the ball rolling. And as I said, if you're not willing to at least empower the lawyers to put their pen to paper and start drafting some things up for us that we could then review, and it would still take four votes to get that NPRM out the door, then it seems to me that you're really saying we're not willing to consider anything at all.
Commissioner Goodman.
That's a bit of a mischaracterization. We were for something today. We did. We drafted it ourselves.
Well, let me
restate it. And you opposed it, and it died by a vote of 3-3. So it's not fair to say we're not for anything. We were
for
something
other than that document. You are not willing to consider any other proposal, anything.
Well, I really don't want to go after the New York Times. but you got to understand, Commissioner Weintraub,
No, I can't.
You took a shot. You expressed a viewpoint in the New York Times, and you doubled down on it today, and you said lawyers out there are giving bad information. The old law isn't the law, current law anymore. And that's your starting predicate. And we were asked to vote on a proposal by Commissioner Ravel today that completely undid 38 years or more of precedent of this body. So your starting points, we were forced to vote on a starting point today. Completely abolish the construct that's been in place for 38 years. So I accept your representation today that what you wrote in the New York Times you're not bound by, that you were being provocative. I do. We had a concrete proposal today that we drafted. If you want to draw up a concrete proposal, I'd be happy to discuss it with you in the future, but I'm not going to harness a whole proceeding. I'm not prepared to support a whole proceeding of the commission today to jump off this without seeing what the ideas are and where we're going to land. As I just mentioned, there are some really thorny issues there, going all the way from the labor unions to media corporations. Given that the interest expressed is no longer just a contribution or expenditure by foreign national and is now about foreign-influenced money, amorphously defined. And until I get greater comfort with that concept, I'm standing on what I voted for today.
Commissioner Weintraub?
So what you're saying is what you voted for today is the only thing that you're willing to consider. You're not willing to let our lawyers try and draft up a document that you could then consider again to see whether there is anything in there that you might be willing to support, including any kind of limitation on spending by corporate treasury funds by corporations that are wholly owned by foreign governments. You're not willing to consider that proposal. Let's do that. That would move the ball forward. Let's consider whether that's a good idea.
Why don't your office draft that up?
Let me just say a couple words. I'm not prepared to support this today, but I will think, I think that this issue is one of importance. I think it has generated a lot of interest, and I think that ultimately we have the same goal, and I want to think long and hard about how we might be able to move the ball forward. And talk with you over the next and talk with all of you over the next couple of weeks to see if there might be a way. I think that this is a little unclear as to where we might be able to go. And notwithstanding the skills and abilities of Mr. Noti and his staff, the ability to consider every option might even be a Herculean task, even for you and your talented lawyers. I don't say that to be glib and say that let's just blow this off. I do want to think a little bit harder about what might be a way, because I think we need to figure out where the potential agreement could lie, and want to think about how we might be able to best get the wide range of perspectives that I think we're looking for. So, long and short is I can't support this today, but I do want to keep the dialogue open to see whether or not there is some way that we might be able to make some constructive progress, Mr. Vice Chairman.
I'm really glad to hear that, and I think if we maybe we could call upon you to call another meeting in 30 days, sometime next month, for not necessarily action, but at least communication on some directions would be helpful. I think as long as we keep the dialogue going in a constructive way, we'll get input already from people that we know and maybe from Congress on areas that are also being thought of. But, I mean, if we pick some issues, for example, like certification, that's a sensible approach in certain areas, not for everything. Or if you want to look at a combination of corporations and how they're structured, that's another way. PACs certainly, I think, deserve a way to to work with a PAC situation. So, I mean, if we work at it, I think we'll find common ground in more areas than we think. But we've got to, we can't just say, write me a letter and or send me something by email and tell me this is it. And then we're all busy, and by the time we get back to it, we think of a bunch of reasons why it doesn't work. And so it never, we don't gel unless we decide we're going to actually get it done. I think we could do it.
Commissioner Hunter?
One of the things Commissioner Weintraub said earlier was, just let me know if you think anything in here is crazy, and we'll take it out. And the problem is there's a lot of things in there that we don't, or at least I'll speak for myself, don't think that should be even placed into an NPRM. And once we get into that, frankly, there's not a whole lot left from your bullet points. And I think we're trying to be nice here today. It's our best effort. But there are some crazy ideas in here, just to be blunt about it. And happy to talk about them later. You know, as you know, we didn't get the memo all that long ago. I did read your New York Times op-ed, and you even admitted in there that part of your purpose was to blunt the impact of Citizens United, a United States Supreme Court decision that gave corporations the right to exercise their First Amendment right and run independent expenditures. And so, you know, here we go with another shot at trying to curtail that First Amendment right. And I did come to your forum. I listened to almost the whole thing, and I've reviewed some of the transcript. And I came away, I didn't want to, I was trying to be open-minded, but came away with, you know, with a similar feeling. And I said that to Ken Doyle at the time. It's just hard for me to believe that most of the speakers there, you know, had as a true interest, they didn't seem to have an interest of really curtailing foreign influence. To me, just listening to them, most of the conversation was about curtailing the ability of corporations to participate. And that's just what I took out of it. You know, by way of an example of something that I think is pretty crazy, and I also said this at your forum. I said this to Norm Ornstein when he talked about it. It looks like it's the third bullet. We should take into account the possibly divided loyalties of U.S.-based companies. And I asked him what he meant by that. I don't have the colloquy in front of me right now, but he basically said, yeah, there's U.S. corporations that do things that are against American national interest. And the last thing I think the federal government should do, and especially this place, is to have any say over who's loyal to this government and who's not. That is just so crazy to me. It's hard for me to even address it. And, you know, I think there's plenty of people. Anyway, I probably should stop there. That to me is certainly not something that the federal government should be engaged in doing. And it sort of falls into the, and again, I'm trying to be respectful. It falls into the category of, you know, another attempt to restrict speech. And that's the way I view the bulk of the bullet points in here, and a lot of them are hard for me to take seriously.
Commissioner Weintraub.
All right, so let me ask you specifically. I've tried this before, and I can't seem to get a straight answer. A rulemaking that would explore whether companies that are wholly owned subsidiaries of foreign governments, whether those entities should be spending in U.S. elections. Is that a crazy idea that you're not willing to consider?
Is that on the list? I might just be missing it. Is that on your list of things that you
I'm sorry, am I limited to that? Because my point was to consider every option.
You're not limited to the list, but I just don't see that in here.
I'm asking you now.
Okay. I'm certainly not in favor of foreign government spending in elections. There's nobody that is in favor
of that. Is that on the table? A rulemaking that would address corporate spending, corporate treasury funds by companies that are wholly owned subsidiaries of foreign governments.
So it's basically the SSF issue.
No, corporate spending, treasury funds, not the PACs. Corporate treasury funds, spending in U.S. elections by companies who are wholly owned subsidiaries of foreign governments. Is that a crazy idea, or could we consider that?
I don't think that's a crazy idea. First of all, second of all, I don't see it on your list. But I'm just saying, you've asked us to look at your list, and you spent years on your list and, you know, read everything. So I'm just kind of surprised it's not on your list. So, but we're not saying that there's nothing we should consider. And as Commissioner Goodman said, we've made a proposal. We voted on it. We think it was a, you know, concerted effort on our part Commissioner Goodman's office drafted it. We're not.
I saw it 48 hours ago for the first time.
You can spend more time with it if you want to vote again next time. You know,
I want to put it in a rulemaking. I want to get comment.
I understand that, but as Commissioner Goodman said, this is something that we put forward. We think it's a step in the right direction. It covers a lot of the issues we've talked about today. It allows a certification process, which, you know, does provide something new. And that's a new thing that's not now out there, and it provides more safeguards. And I don't think that there's ever a process where everyone can feel completely comfortable that there's not any foreign influence.
But that proposal would allow spending by corporations that are wholly owned subsidiaries of foreign governments as long as a U.S. citizen directs the spending. It would. Under your proposal. So how about a rulemaking that would put your proposal out and the proposal that I'm making right here, right now? It's not complicated. I'm sorry it wasn't in the memo, but it's really not that hard to understand. That would put out the proposition that we should look at the rules for spending corporate treasury funds only by corporations that are wholly owned subsidiaries of foreign governments.
I'm not sure that that's not already addressed by current law, but if you want to, as Commissioner Goodman said, if you want to draw something up, we'll take a look at it.
That's what I'm trying to do today, is to get consensus that we could have our lawyers draft something up for us, for our consideration. You're saying you don't want our lawyers. Do you want me personally to write it, and then you'll consider it?
I think you can do it.
Is there anything anybody else wants to say, or are we ready to go to a motion?
What's the motion to make?
I will. I think
just,
it has, but I will.
Okay.
My motion. I'm going to stick with the motion that I circulated in advance so everyone would have time to consider it. I move that the commission open a rulemaking and direct the Office of General Counsel, because this is what they do. They draft NPRMs for us. Direct them to draft a notice of proposed rulemaking that would allow the commission to consider every option for reducing the potential for foreign spending in our elections, taking into account the views of all commissioners. And that document would then be drafted and presented to the commissioners, and commissioners could mark them up and see whether there was anything left at the end of the day that we were willing to put out for public comment.
Is there any further discussion on that motion? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No. Madam Secretary, that motion fails by a vote of 3-3 with Commissioners Ravel, Weintraub, and the Vice Chairman in favor, and Commissioners Goodman, Hunter, and myself opposed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Weintraub?
Can I raise another suggestion? And I apologize. I didn't put this in the memo either, but it has occurred to me that one thing that perhaps we could do to reassure the American public that we actually take this issue seriously. I read your proposal, and you talked about some old cases as evidence that the commission takes these issues seriously. Look at these precedents. Well, some of those precedents took 5 and 6 years to resolve. So there must have been a tolling agreement, because one of them started in 1996 and didn't get resolved until 2002. Could we direct our counsel that it is the sense of the commission that foreign influence is a really important issue, and we would like them to prioritize that in their enforcement docket. And if we get complaints on that issue, we want them to put that at the top of the list and tee them up for our decision-making as soon as possible, so that if there are allegations in this election, we're not still talking about it in 2018. Could we make it an enforcement priority?
Sure. Without objection, it's been a while since I've looked at our EPS criteria. I think that those rank highly in terms of getting scored, but I have no problem with that.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Baker. Uh-huh. I'm getting a nod from folks in the OGC. So, Commissioner Goodman.
I don't believe this violates any privilege to go to aggregate data. But my office has looked
Let's
at
speak
the
first
docket
and figure out what a
cases
privilege
inside
order.
The building, and we count 13 MERS of
various origin, either internal referrals or external, pending in OGC that deal with a foreign national issue.
Well, let's tee them up and get at them.
Sure.
Because that's actually a fair number of complaints.
They are not all complaints, external.
Okay.
Okay. I think that brings us to the end of the agenda, and not a moment too soon. So I will turn to Debbie Ciccone on behalf of the staff director. Are there any management or administrative matters to consider?
Mr. Chairman, there are none.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.